All right, we got two or three minutes to 5 o'clock my time. It's 8 o'clock if you're on the East Coast, though. It seems like a lot of people are on the East Coast, but I know there's a couple of us left coasters out there. Nerdy says she's been geeked about this interview since I announced it. Let's see. Thank you very much. What's up, Nerdy? So good to see you. The Red Baron says, I haven't checked any of his work yet, but he's interested to hear what he has to say. Well, you're about to, because it's a big brain show. If there's one thing we got some damn big brains around here. Big, big brains. All right, we're back. It's the Big Brain Show for what, Thursday today? I think today is Thursday. We're at 5 p.m. sharp. I'm going to hit up VSOF over on Mega. Let's see, I got this up here so you guys can see all the secret workings behind the scenes here on Mega. And let's see, I'm in a chat. We probably should do a meeting, huh? What if I'll just start one and see what happens? And then... I think I should be able to share that, yeah. I should be able to turn all this shit on. Uh-oh. Uh-oh, it's getting picky. We're going to do this here. I'm going to share this meeting. Over here with somebody. Bam. Hey, we just add them. I like that when you can just drag people into a meeting. And then wham, bam, just like that. Oh my gosh, this thing's going to be a pain in the ass. Okay, let me give Mega some permissions. Oh.
No, we're good.
It says it's asking for permission. Well, you're hearing probably the show come through. Because it's telling me I don't have a microphone. It's kind of weird. It's like click the. It says click the microphone in the browser bar, but there's not one. Kind of crazy. Will this thing stay open if I jump out and jump back in? You're not even gonna hear me for a minute. What the fuck am I talking? See here. Let me resolve this. I'm gonna close this. We can't be having this kind of problem. But we can't be having no problems, can we? That's right. Let's see here. I figured this is just as good as anything. Boop, boom. Doesn't give me... Okay. We're going to do this over and over. There is no microphone here, faggot. This is so weird. We just did this earlier. Everything was fine. Now it's not going to work. Yeah, I can't unmute. That's kind of the whole thing. That's kind of the whole problem here. That's kind of been the whole thing all along, is it won't let me unmute.
No, you just need to unmute. Just click the little mute button in the lower,
yeah,
in the bottom.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
The little
He'll get this in a
icon.
Minute. You know what I'm going to do is I'm just going to close every fucking browser, and we'll do this. Boop, 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 boop. Here we go, here we go. Now, give me the microphone. Let me try this shit again. There it is. Boom. Now it's going to work. Yeah, so yeah, all that red tape over that shit, I just had to close every browser window. Isn't that how it works? Every single time?
Well, you figured it out.
Yeah, it was asking me for permission. I had to give the browser permission to use the mic, but it wasn't giving me any way to give it permission, so... Closing everything and then just coming back after closing all the browsers helped. But now I'm going to be bringing up all the other chats. So, but no worries. They can wait. They don't have anything to say. So we're here with the Vocational Science of Freedom. Welcome to the show and thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate when people spend time hanging out with us and talking to us. And you have a lot of stuff I think is going to be worth talking about.
Well, thanks for having me. And yeah, it's good to be here.
Let's see here. I'm gonna just pull this out of the view here for a second. So I'm not sure if you're watching the stream or not, but you saw me have to close everything. I'm gonna slowly bring back those chats one at a time, but try to keep this this chat going as well. We're always multitasking in this business, man. You have a show, right? You've among other things. Tell us a little bit about all of the things that you do. If you would be so kind, as much as you want to.
Yep. Gotta watch out for those shoes, they'll get you. Probably not, because if you are acting as a good little infant, then they won't mess with you unless they just want a little bit out of you. And that's, of course, how this whole entire system is set up. It's set up with you wandering into various different contracts with the corporate state. You ask permission to do XYZ, you get permits, licenses. And those permits and those licenses end up placing you into the jurisdiction of them without you even knowing it. So when the poor guy goes into court and he wants to try and argue his standing or argue his position, well, there's all these contracts that he's stuck in that that's why the judge is laughing, because he didn't get rid of the contracts. He didn't properly alter his status. He certainly didn't serve the judge prior to going to court to make them aware of that change in status. And another side point, you said the word sovereign citizen. That's actually a term that was created by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a known Jewish domestic terrorist organization. And they teach that term to cops, to attorneys, to judges, so that anyone who attempts to stand upon their substantive rights is automatically labeled as that. And they're all, and because they're labeled as that, they're seen as one of the highest threats in America. Right, because it's an oxymoronic term, because you can't. Here's the thing. You can't be a sovereign and then be a citizen of the United States, because a citizen of the United States under the 14th Amendment is one that has to be subject to the jurisdiction of Congress. Well, a sovereign isn't subject to anything. We, the people, are not subject to anything, unless, of course, we're ignorant enough or we get bamboozled into signing some contract or getting some license that then puts us under the jurisdiction. Because when you enter into a contract with the corporate state, you're bypassing your protected rights under the state and federal constitutions. Because you're going and asking for a permission, and the contract that you sign, it will always say in there, are you a citizen of the United States? And of course you check yes, because you don't know any better. And that's the presumption that the attorney and the judge and the courts then use to say, oh, we've got another little infant that wants to be subject to the jurisdiction of Congress. Try and fight something that have only a little bit of knowledge are in real trouble. And that's part and parcel of the reason why I started the VSOF, is to make sure that people do not wander into that situation unprepared.
I have a couple of mutes, and if I don't do them just right, I'll have a really big problem. So,
you don't have to mute out to me in Mega every time you stop talking, because you don't have any background noise. It should be fine on the Mega side.
That's good. A lot of times we get a little feedback, but no worries. But so these things are just kind of tricks, as you said, that put you under their jurisdiction by accepting them or by requesting them, right? There's a matter of consent involved, and this has been a hot topic through a lot of my recent guest shows, is that they need consent from you, and you have to give it to them.
Right. Yeah.
They can't just take it.
Nope, they can't just take it, because as Jefferson said, the just powers of government are derived from the consent of the governed. So if there's no just powers, if there's no consent, there is no just power, and then therefore there's no just government. You cannot simply take or force somebody into doing something that they don't want to do. That's called slavery. So what has the attorney done? They've created a system through which they decided to take back what they lost, meaning what the crown lost. What we took by arms in 1776, the attorney has slowly taken back by force of insight. And the Civil War, I mean, there's a lot of history as to how this whole creature got created. The very reason why we're under or being ruled by Roman civil law and not the common law, there's a very long history to it. If you guys really want the whole breakdown, I have a timeline class where I have laid out as much of it as I've found up to this point. I will be redoing the timeline class with about 5 more years of information, which I've collected, but that is an aside. That's coming up soon. But the timeline class will walk people through this, how this change happened, because in all of the preambles, in all the constitutions, whether it be state, federal, it doesn't matter, they all say, we the people here ordain and establish this constitution to do X, Y, Z for whatever. Okay. To ordain means to create law. To establish simply means to write it down on a piece of paper. So we the people, in our sovereign capacity, ordain and establish this thing for you guys over there who are willing to take an oath to uphold, protect it, and follow these rules that we've set down to do this thing called government. And all the powers that we give them, those that swear an oath to uphold and protect, said, those powers are only ever vested. They came from us. So we vest these people with power. these public trustees under good behavior for a certain amount of time to go do certain things that we don't feel like doing on a daily basis, like making roads or whatever. But the second that they get out of their box, the second that they try and jump out of that box as to the things that they're only allowed to do, they have committed what's called a trespass. Now, if you took all the licenses and you took all the contracts out of the way, like let's say we could magically just get rid of all of them. Okay, they would only be able to do what is stated within the constitutions. But what have they done? They've created a system of Roman civil law, also known as municipal law, where you have corporations like cities, counties, even these private for-profit courts, and even the states themselves. They create these contracts and say, well, here, infant, you have to come get permission from us if you want to do these things. Okay, well, why did I ever get put in this position to begin with? And it all starts with registration. Registration under Roman civil law is where you go and register something with Caesar. And then what happens is that the title is split. It's split between what's called legal title and equitable title. So when you go and register your car with the state, what happens is that they keep the manufacturer certificate of origin, the actual title. That's the real allodial title to your car, the thing that you would get from the dealership had you done it correctly. But because you don't do it correctly, you go into a dealership, you buy a car. The dealership says, show me a license, infant. And you go, okay, here it is. And they say, oh, you're from Texas. Okay, what do? They then send the MCO, the Manufacturer Certificate of Origin, to the Secretary of State of Texas. They now have the title. The state now holds the actual title to your car. Mm-hmm. Then what do they give you? They give you what's called a certificate of title. It's not the fucking title.
Right.
It's a certificate of title. That then gives you the equitable title. That's the equitable title, which then gives you the right to use, which then that makes you into what's called a usufructuary, which is a big long word, which just means you have the right to use the thing. But it also means that you do not have the actual title. So that's how they're telling you, okay, infant, when you're using our property, you have to have on your seatbelt, you have to make sure that the lights work, you have to make sure you have a catalytic converter on, you have to make sure you drive 55 miles an hour, you have to have insurance on the thing that we actually own, but we're forcing you to put insurance on it, and all these things, right? Okay, so this is the problem with registration. It puts you into an inferior jurisdiction of law.
Yes.
Now, if you were to build your own fucking car, you could create your own manufacturer's certificate of origin if you wish to, and you would not have to register it with the state. But now think about registration in another way. What do people do when they go to a foundling hospital to have a baby?
Birth.
They enter into a birth certificate contract. The mother and the father sign this thing, and they don't even know what they're doing. But basically what it ends up happening is that mother and the father abandon the child at the foundling hospital. And a foundling is a lost or abandoned child of unknown parentage. That's what a foundling is. And every single hospital out here is a foundling hospital. So when you enter into that contract, what you're doing is you're abandoning your child by document. Like, you take the child home, but in a sense, you've just registered the child in the same way that you registered that car. So you're now considered to be, and then here's the other problem. So you've registered it, you leave with the child, but it's registered there at the hospital. So you've abandoned it by document. Then what happens? 7 years goes by, the presumption of death kicks in. So the state goes, well, nobody came back to claim them. We don't know where they are.
Huh.
So when that presumption of death kicks in, you're not only considered dead to the law, you're also considered to be abandoned, and because you've never come back forward and claimed your estate, you're also considered to be an infant because no one's ever had proof that you've come a full age.
So now this, which, I apologize. I don't mean to cut you off. There's probably a little bit of delay, but essentially, even though each one of these things in and of themselves are fairly staggering, and you know, the idea that, you know, license actually bonds you to having an authority over you, birth. I mean, birth being the birth certificate being another, you know, clever trick. I think this really it starts to outline something bigger in that these aren't just scams, right? These aren't just ways of them to take advantage of you. They're not just legal ways for them to hold it, authority over you, but they are those things. But it outlines the idea that your entire life, the entire country, the entire experience of America as we've known it for our whole lives is a fiction. It's a story that somebody told you, and none of it's actually true. Like, you're not actually in a country, you're in a corporation. I mean, this goes very, very deep and it affects everything in our life essentially here in the West, right?
That's true. Yeah. And the story changed at the Civil War, meaning that people understand that they're sovereign and we have unalienable rights and all the great stuff that was laid down by the founding fathers, Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, Northwest Ordinance, all that good stuff. Well, what happened in the Civil War was that the Southern states left because basically Washington said, we're going to put some unlawful taxes upon the Southern states. And the Southern states said, we're not having that. And they decided to blow up the tariff office that they were collecting tariffs in, which happened to be what was called Fort Sumter. They didn't attack the fort because it was a military fort. They blew it up because it was a tariff collecting office that was collecting an unconstitutional tax. So the Virginians said, fuck this. We've had enough of that. And decided to take matters in their own hands. And then the Southern states seceded, which, of course, they had the right to do. And then the Civil War happened. Okay. Now, to back that up a second, because you cannot explain the totality of what was going on during the Civil War in a few sentences. But to back it up for a minute, what the North had been infiltrated by was the powers of the Rothschilds, the powers of central bankers, the powers of the attorney, meaning the esquires. And an esquire is one rank under a knight as far as peerage under the British crown. Okay, so every single esquire out here has oath and allegiance to the British crown, not to America. And there's a very specific point about that, both in the Articles of Confederation and in the original 13th Amendment. Now, most people don't know that there's two 13th Amendments. Everybody knows about the 13th Amendment that ended slavery. Okay, great, fine. Perfectly good, valid thing to do. Who the fuck wants slavery? Got it. But the problem is, is that there was another 13th Amendment that was passed and ratified that basically stated, and I'm just going to paraphrase because I don't have it in front of me. It basically stated that anybody who holds an allegiance to a foreign prince or principality may not hold office in the United States of America. Okay, so what the fuck does that mean? It means that every single esquire was instantaneously barred from holding any office in the United States of America. Well, what did that do? That cut off the crown from being able to have influence and alter our laws, change what we were doing here, even though we'd already won the revolution. And yet, where's the 13th Amendment? Where'd it go? Oh, that's right. There was a little hiccup war that the Rothschilds pretty completely funded on their own volition. That's called the War of 1812. And what they did was they marched to every single courthouse in every single state and they burned the records that the 13th Amendment ever existed.
Wow.
There are snippets of it out there that do exist. And you see it in certain writings. I've collected quite a few. And I've held classes on it and given the information out to people to prove that this thing is still in full force and effect. Well, okay, if you have that in full force and effect, well, then how can the British crown, how can the jewelry of the attorney get back in? Well, break the country in half. Start the Civil War. So what did they do in the North? They started to do, well, the fuckery like I was just speaking of. They created unconstitutional tariffs and did a lot of other things to the Southern states. And the Southern states said, well, we pretty much had enough of that. And after the Civil War, after the South lost, after the Civil War, what they did was they did what was called the Reconstruction Acts. And before the Reconstruction Acts, what the D.C. basically did, what the North basically did, was they put all of the southern states under military jurisdiction. They called them military districts. That's literally to the reason why to this day we still have district courts, but I don't get into all that. The fact is that they put them under martial law. The executive order was Executive Order 100, which is known as the Lieber Code. And to this day, the running of not just the southern states, but all of the states is still being run through martial law. And the emergency that Lincoln declared has been continued by every single fucking president all the way up and including Trump. Because they have to continue to keep saying that there's an emergency to keep allowing for the emergency war powers, which were started all the way back then, to be able to continue. And that's the one line in the sand. That's the place, that's the time in history where things changed from, okay, we have a constitutional republic, we're all sovereign, we have rights, unalienable rights, and we're not asking permission to do X, Y, Z. And then after the Civil War, they come along with this farce called the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was said that it was created so that they could give the newly freed black slaves, what? Civil rights. Now, there's a vast difference between civil rights and unalienable rights. Unalienable rights you have from nature and nature's God, as Jefferson put it. Civil rights are granted to you by government. So it's an inferior form of a right. And so in the 14th Amendment, they granted the blacks civil rights. And they said that if you are a citizen of the United States, you are born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Okay, what if I was born or naturalized in the United States, but I'm not subject? That does not then make me a citizen of the United States. I would be a de jure state citizen. I'd be a Wisconsinite or a Texan or a Virginian, right?
Yeah.
Because the states are nations. That's why they have governors. The United States is a trust. That's why it has a president.
So this is really wild, and you've clearly studied like a lot of technicality, a lot of word play, right? They do a lot with language by changing words and, you know, just small manipulations, but those are the things where therein lies the legalities, right? So you've mentioned a couple times, excuse me, I told you my throat would be cooked by the end of the day. It's getting late in the week. Now, you mentioned that, there's a couple ways I could go here. I do want to come back to the different kinds of law because you explained those a little bit to me earlier.
Yeah, we can do that later. Sure. No, but okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
Before I do that, I suppose I just wanted to say, you mentioned a couple of times that, you know, you've got this up on your page. I've mentioned, you know, that you've got a lot of content on your page. I think we may be understating slightly exactly what kind of work you've been doing, but you do. You have, when he says that he's got this on his page or that he's got a class on this, BSOF actually, he makes a ton of content, and he's got lots of content up on his pages. He does run classes at least once a week. He's got his own show, and he's also got infrastructure, right? Like you have an educational infrastructure that you built as well to help people learn these things, and there are a lot of things. How long does it take someone to learn all this? I mean, you're probably still learning, I assume, but is this something that, you know, people need to put aside a few years for, or is this something that you can, you know, in 3 months?
That's a good question. I think it really comes down to how determined one is, the mentor that they have, and the information that they're presented in a specific order to get a good foundation and then be able to move forward. Because when I started in the beginning, which was, you know, 18 years old, I got a traffic ticket, walked into court, saw all these cows going up to the judge and just mooing and giving over $100. I thought to myself, something's wrong here. I didn't know what it was, But I'm like, I got to figure this out. So I started down a path, started looking things up. I started with reading statutes, which is the very worst way to start trying to learn law. And then I found some mentors. And I was like, oh, that mentor taught me there's different jurisdictions. And this mentor taught me that, oh, the United States I thought was actually is something different. And I learned that, oh, wait a second. I give up my rights when I enter into contract with corporate state. And when, you know, where else, you know, on and on and on and on and on. So I've done all this, laid it out as best as I possibly can in an organization that is the Vocational Science of Freedom. And the symbol itself represents what the organization is. It's the circle. And then in the center, there's an S. That center S represents the understanding that we're all sovereign, that you are a sovereign being. And then the four quadrants around sovereignty are what is required in order to keep your sovereignty, which is self-reliance, self-awareness, self-governance, and self-defense. And then in the inner circle, the circles that come out from it represent you in the center. So the first circle around sovereignty is your self-awareness, your self-governance, your self-defense, and your self-reliance. And then one circle out from that would be your family. The next circle out from that would be your community. And then the next circle out from that would be your state or your nation. So you have to realize that it starts in the center with you and works itself out away from you. And the farther you get away, the farther it goes out. Those are the things that should have the least influence on your sovereignty.
This is very clever.
The things that have the most influence on your sovereignty should be your family, should be your kin, should be your blood, should be your community. And that's how I structured the Vocational Science of Freedom. And the classes that I teach are based upon the quadrants, and they're all color-coded. So if you go to the VSOF on any of the platforms and you look at my classes that I have, they'll all have a little colored dot in front of them, whether that's red or orange or blue or green. That way you know, oh, this is a self-defense class. Oh, this is a class on self-governance or, you know, whatever. And so I made it an easy way for people to learn what they wanted to learn about, because I don't force anybody to learn anything. I'd say, okay, this is the information presented, and what your will is your will. And take it in whatever way that you can absorb it. And then if you have questions, you can join us. We have a Vocational Science of Freedom Revolt server. So we hold our Revolt server as a repository of knowledge that you can come in and out, talk about stuff, ask questions, no problem. And then I have all of the files that I have on Mega. And if you want to be a paid member of the VSOF, you can do a yearly membership or you can do a lifetime membership. The yearly membership gets you access to the entire Vocational Science of Freedom online library, which is 75,000 files. The lifetime membership gets you my entire hard drive, which is over 800 gigs of information. Actually, no, it's 1.2 tera now.
Man, that is a lot of info.
Which is everything I've ever collected. But you can use the lifetime VSOF hard drive as your own personal library. You don't have to go online. All you have to do is search the drive.
So this is pretty interesting. You've had quite a few students, and I'm sure that you probably regularly get approached by people. Does the average person that comes to you or finds you, do they know a little bit already, or are they like a babe in the woods and you have to kind of start all over with the whole colored pill system that everybody uses?
I would say that most of the people that come to the VSOF have already had some sort of learning. I get a lot of people from other groups that they get frustrated with these other groups, and they're like, I'm not finding any remedy here. What they're saying doesn't even make any sense. And I got so pissed off. I wanted to find something else. And then I found you, and I'm so glad I found you. And I was like, great, good. Just, you know, keep learning and come and join us. And yep, let's get going here. And then I would say that's like probably 80% maybe 75-80% of the people already have some sort of knowledge background in law or in the history of law or just in the history of America. And then the other 25 or 20%, those are the babes in the woods, and that's okay. They're the ones that ask the very foundational basic questions. And that's good too, because it's good for people to have things where you'll go back over the same information again. So that you retain and you keep the foundation solid. And so, yeah, that's about what the percentage is.
80-20, man. That's a, you know, it's a pretty solid equation or a pretty solid ratio. We use it all the time. And for some reason, it seems to always be right. See, what's up? Yeah. Lemurian girl is in the house. And she says the 14th Amendment freed the black slaves, quote unquote, freed the black slaves and made everybody else slaves. That's kind of, yeah, exactly right. You put my clown horn on that one because that's exactly what happened.
And Lemuria girl's part of the VSOF. She joins in on classes, live classes.
Oh, fantastic.
Yep, because if you want to join the live classes and actually be in the mega room, then you've got to get vetted and you go to our website, download the welcome package, answer the questions, email them to me, and then you can join the Revolt server and you can join our classes on Mega. Because I make sure to vet people, and I do it in a very, I would say, I don't say sneaky, but I do it in a way that people don't realize what I'm doing in asking the questions. And I have never had, I think maybe one person got through. And that was before I was really doing like serious vetting. And as soon as they started talking shit on the server, I just booted them. And then I totally removed them from all platforms and banned them from even so much as chatting on any of the platforms. So I'm very serious when it comes to keeping negative people out. And the thing about it is that when it comes to people, if someone wants to specifically come just to make ruckus and be a pain in the ass, well, you can go be a Jew somewhere else. Fuck you. I don't have time for that. And neither does anybody else in the VSOF. We are doing things, working together, creating remedy that is literally the tip of the spear when it comes to taking our sovereignty back. And I'm proud of that. And I'm also proud of everybody in the VSOF because I could not do this on my own, even though I put 30 years into it. You know, I'm just one man. I can't do everything.
Man, I know that feeling for sure. But you've done quite a bit. Interesting take is that, you know, not everybody kind of comes this way, or not everybody comes the same way to kind of where you all are now. And a lot of us just kind of have discovered the Jew through whatever their field of research is. So if you're, you know, if you're looking into civil law versus natural law versus, you know, other types of law, you're eventually going to run into Jews. If you're looking into money and the way that money is rigged, the way that banking works, you're eventually going to run into the Jew. If you want to look into the dark corners of things or behind religions or, you know, there's just, they're behind a lot of
societies.
Things.
Yep, exactly.
So yeah, is that how you ran across them? You're not a radical, you're not a racist, you're not a neo-Nazi or any of these types of things, right?
No, I'm not a neo-Nazi. I'm definitely white positive. I am definitely a racist in that standpoint, meaning that I stand with my race and put my race first. Now, that doesn't mean that I put or try to subvert nor diminish nor destroy any other race, which is what the Jews do. And I think everybody has the right to perpetuate their own race and be proud of it. That's fine. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But when you come at me and you say, I'm going to control you, I'm going to enslave you, I'm going to take you out in whatever form that may be, well, that, my friends, is a declaration of war. And that has different repercussions. So yeah,
different system, right? For use for a remedy in that one.
Well, exactly. Yeah, because the only reason that a sovereign holds court is simply to prove to the rest of the world that he's right. He already knows he's right. He already knows that this guy did what he did. He can prove that this guy did what he did. The only reason he holds court, instead of just going to his house, unsheathing his sword and taking his head off, is so that he can prove to the rest of the world that he's right. So then when he does get judgment and the fucker does hang from a rope from in-law thievery or whatever other offense, everybody can look at him and go, yeah, that sovereign made a good argument. He's right. That guy, yeah, fuck that guy.
I'm very base. But you're right. Like, this is the real rules of war. This is the real rules of conflict. It's the real rules of anything, really, is that there's, I mean, imagine that there's a sort of a code of honor. There's already a language around many of these concepts, and some of this language is already accepted by, you know, by the people at the top as legal or valid, or, you know, I'm sure there are words for it that they won't let us know, you know, that imply that they're not only meaningful, but they're also lawful, legal, and binding. You know what I mean? They're,
yes, everything in court is based upon honor and dishonor. All of it. Everything. If you go to court and you're the one that's in dishonor, you're going to lose. If you go to court and you're the one that's in honor, yeah, if you're the one that goes to court and you're the one that's in honor and you can prove it that they are in dishonor, then you win. And I don't care if it's – and you mentioned before about going through the jurisdictions of law. This is probably a good segue to that. So you have – there's five jurisdictions of Anglo-Saxon law. There's and I'm going to go from the top bottom, top to the bottom, like the most powerful to like the least. So at the top, you have common law. Common law is based upon natural law. Natural law is do no harm to anyone else or their property and uphold your oath and uphold up all your contracts. Basically, do what you say you're going to do. Then below that, you have equity. Now, equity is also intermingled with this aspect of Roman civil law. And equity was created originally in England in what was called the courts of chancery. And this is kind of a weird bit of thing, but basically the Jew attorneys went to the king and said, hey, king, looks like you're having a, you know, like you're doing a lot of work and you're constantly in court, you know, and you're in your common law court here. And maybe we can take some of the burden from you, and why don't you create this other court over here? We'll call it chancery, and we'll hold your conscience for you over here, and we'll do what's fair and equitable when it comes to contractual matters, or more specifically, matters of trust matters, because trusts are something that is a creation of Roman civil law and are basically unknown at common law. And so when the attorney muddled up various different systems and different things with these trusts coming into England, that was where these chancery courts were created to kind of deal with this law merchant jewry shit. So that's equity. Now there's more things to deal with equity, but for now I'll just set it aside for now. Then below equity, you have maritime admiralty. Maritime admiralty deals with banking and merchant affairs, but on a global scale. And it literally does deal with the law of the sea, what ships have to do, what they have to do when they come into port. They have to give a manifest. Hey, this stuff wasn't here yesterday. Oh, it just manifested because the boat showed up. Okay, here's your manifest. This is what's coming into the country, so on and so forth. So maritime admiralty law has its roots in the law merchant. And it really goes back to the laws of Oleron and even farther back into Phoenicia, Cana, and into Egypt. But so that's maritime admiralty. Now, every single insurance contract is only ever adjudicated under maritime admiralty, and most people do not understand that. So if you have insurance on your car and you get in a car wreck and the other insurance company goes after your insurance company and they decide to have a court case and they drag you in there and you do whatever, all of that is being done under maritime admiralty. It's not at law. It's not even an equity because it had an insurance contract connected to it. So that's maritime admiralty. All right, next one down below that. Down below that, you have military law. Military law should only affect you if you have actually willingly entered into a contract to be part of some military. So you're subject to courts martial. You have to follow military code. If you fuck up, the MPs will come beat your ass and they'll throw you in Leavenworth for a while. Well, there's another aspect of military law that does actually apply to us because of what I said regarding what happened in the Civil War. Because this emergency, this martial law, if you will, has still been continued from the Civil War, most people don't realize that when they're walking into these courts, you're also walking into a military jurisdiction. And a lot of people make arguments about that. They're like, well, the yellow fringe around the flag, that makes it military. Okay, great, yes, according to flag law. But that's not what makes the court military. It's because we're all sitting here being run by martial law ever since the Civil War. And there are several different acts that have been done as far as the federal side that have literally deemed United States citizens enemy combatants. So they literally wrote laws to create the situation wherein their own citizens are enemy combatants to them, which is fucking crazy, but it is what it is. And so that's military law, little snippet of it. Then underneath that, you have ecclesiastical. Now, ecclesiastical is church law. It's also canon. And in England, and let's say about the years between, I don't know how far I want to go back, but ecclesiastical law was really established, like first established in England with William the Conqueror, who was the Jew that came over in 1066, brought his serpent seed line fucks with him, destroyed what he could in England, got rid of the common law, got rid of what at the time was basically, they weren't grand juries. What they were called was the Court of 100. And it was 100 families that would take care of their business, kind of like how we think about like counties now. And William the Conqueror said, okay, he's going to disband the Court of 100 and he's going to separate the spiritual and temporal courts. So he gave his priests of El certain jurisdiction over certain things, which to this day are still technically being run under ecclesiastical law. Those are marriages and divorces, bankrupts from a standpoint of that you basically you're a pauper. So paupers, bankrupts, lunatics, meaning those that are crazy, and then also probably most importantly is probate. Because they're dealing with the property of the dead. So when you die, oh, who's dealing with that? Oh, we gave that to the church, or the church gets to deal with it because they're dealing with dead people. Huh? Okay. Well, now technically that's not supposed to be going on in America the way the founding fathers set up our system. We were only supposed to have three jurisdictions of law in our constitutional system, which was common law. And in the constitutions, that's stated as at law. So at law is common law. Equity, which is fine as long as you're dealing with contractual matters. And then maritime admiralty, which was only supposed to be jurisdiction that the feds had control over because the states didn't want to have to deal with things on their own. Like you wouldn't want Virginia, say, having a different trade treaty with France, and then North Carolina having a different trade treaty with France, and then Florida having a different trade treaty with that would be ridiculous.
That'd be a disaster, yeah. Like yeah, then, like and, France comes and attacks us, like Florida, but everybody else isn't in the war.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So when the Constitution was written, they realized that, and they said, well, okay, this wasn't really something that was completely taken, like totally like taken care of in the Articles of Confederation. So they said, all right, we need to put it in here so that the feds take care of maritime admiralty jurisdiction. So, and treaties, and that's part and parcel of that, obviously dealing with ships and all that stuff. So those are only supposed to be the three. Now, aside from military, but again, that's only if you've joined the military. We're not supposed to be under military jurisdiction walking around being, you know, one of the people of Wisconsin or Texas or whatever. That should have nothing to do with us.
Right.
If we haven't signed that contract. And so those are the five jurisdictions of Anglo-Saxon law, because we don't deal with shit like, we don't deal with fucking Sharia law. You know, we don't deal with anything else that's not of those five, basically. Like, we don't have, say, law merchant courts, which are technically Jewish law. They don't say it, but it is. And there's all kinds of interesting history that gets into the law merchant and how it actually came on to England and started infecting English courts. But I don't get into all that. I mean, people can watch the classes as far as the history of that is concerned.
Yes, and you're going to hear a lot of things tonight, guys. Keep in mind that almost all of these things he does have covered, man. You can spend a lot of time over on his Rumble or his Odyssey. Man, you know so many things that, like, everything that you talk about, I think two or three questions, and then we're like on to, man, if I were writing those down, I'd have 100 of them right now. But, man, it's over.
Well, that was the five jurisdictions, so I just wanted to get that out of the way. At least, he had mentioned it before. So that's gone. So we got that.
I'm glad you did. Yeah. You know, no, it's cool. Like, I told everybody, and we talked a little bit before the show, I sort of mentioned, but I think we talked for a good little while, and one of the things.
Yeah, an hour and a half, actually.
Yeah, man. Shit, and I'm sure we're gonna do it some more because I'm really enjoying this, and you know a lot of things that people need to know, but. One of the big things that strikes me is that you can almost never get people to, like, for me, I may get someone to learn something, or if I harp on something for a couple of weeks, you know, some people may accept it. It's really hard to get people to learn. So I can kind of see why you do it like a school. That way the student has to come to you. You know, they have to have the desire and they have to have the will to do it. Right. That's a big thing, and if you don't have
it is a big thing, because without will, you don't have property.
Right. Explain. Without will, you don't have property.
Without will, you don't have property. So the class that I did, I read through a treatise, and it wasn't all that long ago. It was a treatise on the law of American administration, and it was. The classes are named Your Estate Administered from Birth to Death, and I have them on platforms. But the first class of that, I was reading from a treatise, and the opening paragraph actually surprised me, because it was something that I didn't actually know myself, and I thought, whoa. And what it talked about was the fact that without will, there can be no property. And I thought about that for a second. I was like, wait a second. That makes perfect sense, because an infant technically doesn't have will of their own. They have a guardian. And you have to come, what's called come of full age. Mm-hmm. And in England, what used to happen was that there was this court. It was called the Court of Wards and Liveries. And what someone had to do was that when they came of full age, it's not a number. It's not like it's, you don't want to confuse it with what's called the age of majority in a democracy, which just means you can join the rest of the fucking shit. Coming of full age means that you are able to handle your own affairs. So an infant had to go to this court, had to prove to the world that he could take care of his own affairs, that he could sue his guardian. And it wasn't in any malice sort of way. This was just something that was done to prove that the infant could handle their own affairs. Then what they would have, their estate. They would have their rights. They would have their land. They would be granted their title, and so on and so on and so forth. And it really struck me regarding that first paragraph. And, if you give me just like 2 seconds, I've actually pulled it up, and I might as well just read it since I've been harping on it for a minute.
Sure.
Because the thing, the real understanding about will is, again, it stunned me, and I've been doing this for 30 years, and I'd never come across anything like this before. And in the rest of the treatise, it connected in this understanding of will and what happens with will and what happens with administration of those who do not have a will. Now, I'm not just talking about a last will and testament. That's not what I'm referring to. So you don't want to confuse what I'm saying is the term will as that. Okay. So here's the paragraph. All right. So this is an introduction, the nature of property and the principles determining its devolution. And devolution means to devolve onto from your heir to heir to heir through sanguinity. So number one, the acquisition of property. My property is that which is mine, period. Thank you. That only is mine which I acquire, hold, and dispose of by my will. It is my will that determines the acquisition of a thing by me, whether originally, meaning I created it or I took something from nature and I decided to make a sword out of it, or by reducing to possession and thus making my property that which was no one's property before. That's the one way that you get property. Second way, or by contract, by which a thing becomes mine through the concurrence of my will with that of his former owner. Since I cannot rightfully acquire property of another without his consent, that is, without his free will. And it is obvious that the will of the original owner is a necessary element in my ownership, and in the ownership of anyone who may lawfully acquire it after me, and remains operative until the property has lost its character as such by voluntary abandonment. By my own free will, I may abandon my property, whereupon it ceases to be such, and relapses into the condition of what's called res nullis, subject to become property by the sole will of any other person who acquires it, meaning like abandoned property. That's where you get the idea of abandoned property rights. That's why you can walk into a house that someone abandoned and hasn't been paying the property tax on. You can pay the property tax on it, and that's what's called adverse possession. You simply took it because it had been abandoned. So that whole paragraph, like, it really put it into perspective as to how the attorney steals our will by these presumptions, the presumption of infancy, the presumption of death, yes, the presumption of that you're a citizen of the United States and subject to the jurisdiction of Congress. And it really put a capstone, and not to sound Masonic, but I was just making a kind of a pun there, that it's the top of the pyramid of the knowledge, that if they're able to take your will in whatever fucking way that they do it, I don't care, whether it be by, you know, 10,000 hours of Prussian education brainwashing, or by watching too much television and thinking that every single cop somehow has authority over you, whatever way it is, if you allow them to have an easement through your mind, they have controlled you by controlling your will.
You know, you bring up a really good point here about will, and I can see how it's mind-blowing. I mean, if you think about it, that would also mean that they cannot give you something, right? Like you cannot possess something by their will, so they can't per se ascribe you with a title that you don't will, or give
that's you exactly right
something that you
that's
don't
exactly will. Right. So, yep, that's exactly like calling you a sovereign citizen.
They can't charge you with something because it's giving you a charge against your.
Yeah, they charge your estate. And what they do in these private for-profit courts is they charge your estate with basically they're charging the infant for incorrect use of property that he hasn't yet claimed for his self by his own will. It's still registered. The state still holds legal title. And this goes for everything. And again, starting with the children, to land, to cars, to firearms, to your fucking dog even now. So that's the problem. You've abandoned it by will, or you've gone to Caesar and say, "Hey Caesar, I'm asking permission to use this thing." And the other real problem with this whole entire system is that you used Federal Reserve notes to buy the thing, supposedly buy the thing. Well, you didn't buy it, because Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution states that only gold and silver shall be tender as payment of debt. Okay, so you gave Federal Reserve notes. You didn't finish, or you didn't actually pay the debt. You discharged it. You gave them a little car note, like a little car loan, which is all Federal Reserve notes are. If you look at them, they're signed twice on both sides. And they're basically saying, this guy owes this guy this much money. That's all they are. They're a debt note. They're not actually, they're not backed by gold and silver anymore because Nixon dropped that shit back in the, I think it was the 70s, early 60s, or late 60s maybe. And it's never been removed. That quote unquote temporary measure of removing the gold and silver standard off of our money. After all these years, it's not fucking temporary. That's permanent. So when infants go to use their stupid monopoly money and they think they're buying something, they're not buying anything. They're discharging the debt because you're doing this, you don't actually own it. You don't have the right to it by law to hold the title because you haven't actually paid for the fucking thing. And that usually blows most people's minds when they do actually get their head wrapped around that. And there's a really, really important court case back in the day, but it's like, well, it was right after Nixon dropped the gold standard. There was this guy, he was an attorney. His name was Jerome Daly. And this case was in Minnesota. And he sued the bank and he said, look, I put up my house as collateral. What did you give me, Mr. Jew banker? You gave me these worthless things, right? Saying that, oh, this is something like worth consideration. No. So he sued the bank and said that, and said the argument that that's even in their own literature in what's called Modern Money Mechanics, which is an internal book for the Federal Reserve. And it literally says that they create these things by bookkeeping entry. Okay, he said, well, that's in violation of Article 1, Section 10. And it was a jury trial. He won it. He got to keep his house, and the bank got fuck all. And yet nobody realizes how important this case is. Nobody goes back and brings it up.
They pay him off in gold. Yeah.
Well, they didn't pay him off in gold, but the fact is that he got to keep his house.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same thing. Yeah. I mean, you're winning on their own rules.
Yes, because you're winning at common law. Right? So you always want to go to the highest jurisdiction and argue common law jurisdiction, whatever that may be.
That's incredibly – this is mind-blowing stuff. It's going to take – I mean, we're going to have you back a couple times. I know this because it's going to take me a while even, and I know a lot of this stuff already, but it takes me a while.
I'll come back anytime.
Yeah, to work out the – I mean, if you multiply this out and if you just factor all this in, all the fundamentals underpinning your reality begin to shift, and that is exactly what should happen because the reality that we live in is fairly chintzy and it's a very thin veneer on top of a very big body of legal and legal rules. But as you said, there are other kinds of rules. Like there's legal, there's religious rules. So I have a burning question and I don't expect you to have the answer, but I do think that you might venture a pretty good proposal. And that is, they seem to be far more interested and far more obedient to their own laws as we are. I mean, even though they use those laws to subjugate us, they use those laws to deprive us of property, of life, liberty. But they follow the rules, even in times when we wouldn't. I mean, I don't know anybody that when they transact anything would give each other receipts. You know, like here's your receipt and here's my receipt. And you know, but the receipt keeping and the accounting and the bookkeeping and this, they stick to very rigidly to the point that they even make up these crazy laws but that they can take advantage of. But they're the only ones that are even fucking aware of them for the most part. Why are they so dedicated to this legal system when they could just roll it, you know, roll us up Bolshevik style and nobody would really resist him. Yeah, like it seems like at this point there wouldn't be too much resistance.
Well, there's a lot of reason for that. One.
Who are they answering to?
Well, they're answering to the history of law itself. There are so many of these things that are so well laid down, have been so for millennia even. And one of them specifically being that aspect of honor and dishonor in the court, as I stated before. And court procedure is an ancient procedure. Now, it differs obviously based on the jurisdiction that you're wandering into. And that's the difference between, you know, are you in a court of record or are you in a inferior court, not of record? And the reason they stick to the rules so rigidly is for multiple reasons. One, they cannot subjugate people and literally put them into forced slavery. Well, not to say that they haven't done that. Obviously, the Jews were the ones that brought over all the blacks from Africa, and they were the ones that ran the slave trade. But let's put physical slavery aside, because the world said, no, we're not doing that anymore. At least supposedly not supposed to be doing it.
Right.
Not that they're not still doing it, and child trafficking and all that other shit, but I don't get into that right now. So they technically put physical slavery aside. Now, the reason that they follow the rules is because they're bound to them through the law merchant, through maritime admiralty law, and through all these other things, which in they themselves have eaten each other through these systems of law for millennia. So they stick to it. It's kind of like a, in a sense, if you want to think about it like this, it's kind of like a code of honor among thieves, in a sense. Not to say that you want to think about that, like the whole aspect of law as being a code of honor among thieves. That's not really what I meant to say. But when it comes to the law merchant, it very much is that, because they're merchants, and this is all a matter of commerce. That's why you're considered a human resource. That's why corporations have human resource departments. They used to have personnel departments. Now they have human resource departments, because you're a fucking resource, like tin, iron, rubber, and steel, right? You're just a resource. And the reason they're doing this is because based upon their global banking system, their global banking system of the IMF and the World Bank run on these principles. That's what the special drawing rights is from the IMF. So every country has what's called special drawing rights off the IMF. Well, where do these special drawing rights come from? They come from the productive value of the citizens that have been registered with that fucking nation that has a central bank. So they, and to put this into perspective as to like a historical truth about this, is that in 1933, the United States went bankrupt. And so what Roosevelt did is he went around to all the state governors and basically forced them, I mean, in a sense, to come to D.C. And what the state governors did is they pledged all of the registered property that had been registered on the state registrars, which would be what at that time? A lot of children and a lot of other property and land. So on and so forth. So the state governors committed treason against their own citizens, and they pledged this property to the United States Corporation, not the original trust, because that got bankrupted in the Civil War. And they used that as collateral to take out loans from a private banking cartel called the Federal Reserve, which they set up in 1913. And the whole history of that and the whole understanding of why they have to follow these rules and what they really did is in various different classes. It's specifically in the, if you go to any of my platforms and just type in Edward Mandel House, that class that I talk about is all about what that guy did. He was called Colonel House, even though he didn't actually have any military background. And basically what he was Woodrow Wilson's handler. He literally totally controlled Wilson. Not only through blackmail, through a few other Jewish things that they did to him, but they also completely controlled him to make sure that he would sign the Federal Reserve Act. Okay, so then the connection between the Federal Reserve coming into existence, the aspect of registry, the aspect of then what happened in 33, where they basically took over everything and said, now we're going to merge somehow, even though you can't technically merge it. We're going to merge law and equity. We're going to turn these two jurisdictions together. Well, it's like trying to mix water and oil. They don't mix from a standpoint of what they were trying to do, but they figured, okay, we took as much property. We made all these presumptions. They're all infants now. They've all registered all their property. Okay, we can just be on our way, which is a title of a book that fucking Roosevelt wrote. He wrote this book called On Our Way. And what was he talking about? He was talking about on the Jews' way. The Jews now control everything. We're on our way. And if you go read the book, he says it in the book that what he did was not constitutionally lawful. He admitted it. But this is how you run a corporation that's pretending to be a de-sure republic. You have to put all this in, all this subterfuge and confuse the people and fuck this all up in all the ways that I've already stated and a lot more to get this thing to work correctly. So that's what happened in 33. And they're now running everything by maritime amity law, the law merchant, and in a certain sense, also military and ecclesiastical. They're not running things as per common law courts of record. Why? Because we can't get there. You are barred from going to the highest jurisdiction because you have all these presumptions, trusts, pledges, bonds, oaths, registration over your ass. You are a bonded debt slave. There is a fidelity bond connected to your birth certificate, which most people don't know about, but you can get it audited. And most people's bonds come back to be somewhere around $350 million to $400 million. That's like your productive
value. I've
heard
this said in different ways.
Bonded as a debt slave.
And that money's been borrowed against or allocated or in other ways leveraged, right?
Yep, over and over and over and over and over. Yes, exactly.
But not on your behalf, on their behalf. Wow.
Yeah, hypothecated and hypothecated. So here's the thing. If everybody in America would come back and claim their estate's property, the Jew would have nothing. Nothing.
See, they're not stealing from you, right? Like, this isn't just theft. This is embarrassment. It's humiliation. There's almost a ritualistic.
Yes, it's called practice. Ritualistic mocking of the victim. Yes, that's what it's called.
This is all very much like it's a ritual to just demean us, demoralize us, and to dehumanize us. And in this, that obviously must be in preparation for other things they have planned. It shocks me that they stick to this when sometimes they will just go right around the law and, you know, shoot someone with a heart attack gun or, like what happened to General George Patton, you know, just end up in an accident and get your neck broken, you know, in 10 places or,
and then die in the hospital or be like Kennedy and take you out or be like Lincoln, take you out too, because he eventually did go against the Jew, even though he was with them to begin with. And he created something called the greenback. He's like, okay, well, I have to have a debt-free currency because you Jews are charging me some ridiculous amount of interest to continue to run my military campaign. Fuck you. I can't do this anymore. And they said, okay, well, fuck you. We're not having you as president anymore. Every single president that's been whacked, every single one of them it's been over central banking issues. They tried to kill Jackson twice. You couldn't do it because he's such a tough son of a bitch. But
yeah.
You know, they tried to whack Jackson, couldn't quite do it. And then we had the Jacksonian banking era, which is where there were state banks, not a central bank. The states had – there were state banks, which you were not connected to a central bank, were not usury, and were backed by gold and silver. And then Garfield pissed him off. They whacked him. And then, you know, Kennedy pissed him off. He created the United States note, was going to put it into circulation. And they're like, nope, we're going to kill you in an open Masonic – ritualistic temple, which is exactly the place he got shot in Dallas.
Wow.
It's an open air Masonic temple. Most people do not know that.
They do this shit right in front of people, man. And it's not hidden. It's just nobody recognizes it. I was telling that to one of my friends the other day. Like, none of this stuff is really hidden. It's just that we haven't been taught to read it the right way or to see. We haven't been given the eyes, right, to see. They give each other all of this. It's not even inside information. It's just it's an inside joke that they understand, you don't. And what's strange is just the oddity of these people. I hate to call them people. They're really into this. They want everything to be a spectacle, right? They want like your attention, not only to be distracted, but to be perverted as well as demeaned and degraded at the same time. It's not good to just be distracted from what's going on over here. They're not just good at the simple crime. Like they really have to pack all the evil they can into one, you know, into every act that they make. And this is reflected in their language, is reflected in the way they treat us or the way that they ignore us.
Yes, and it's been a slow burning of the frog. You know, you can go back as far as you want to go back.
I want to say they work for somebody, but I don't want to make it religious. But at the same, I don't want to make it like like New Agey, you know, or like they're working for the draconians, you know. But they're either a slave. I mean, they seem to be a slave to something, right? They seem to be because they are on the rails.
They follow the Luciferian doctrine, and the Luciferian doctrine is basically me. And there are things out there like the Lucius Trust, which have plainly stated that no one shall enter the New World Order without taking an oath to Lucifer. There's been countless examples of this as to what they're following and what they're doing. You know, Baal worship, Moloch. You can go on and on and on as far as the different things and entities that they've worshipped, but they've always been about human sacrifice. They've always been about animal sacrifice, child sacrifice, just pure evil.
Yeah.
And in the ancient world, they were centered in a place called Tarsus or Tartarsus, which was the center of human sacrifice for the entire ancient world. And the Greeks actually called it hell. And that's where Paul came from. Paul was a priest of Tarsus until he followed Jesus. And he was one of those Luciferian fucks himself. And he's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And so it's kind of interesting that that happens to be St. Paul's Cathedral in the Vatican. But we can get into the Vatican stuff, too, if you want, because that's a whole animal that got created out of the cult of Rome, continued what it was doing, continued its control, and eventually, you know, Rome basically turned into a religion. It turned into the cult of Rome and the Vatican. And basically, the English Empire turned into a bank. It turned into the Bank of England. Or you can vice versa that one, I suppose. You could say, in a sense, you could argue that the Bank of England created the English Empire. But this is how these things progress. And then they morph what they're doing to confuse those who would only go skin deep as to what they're seeing. If you don't go deep into what they're up to, where it comes from, the history of it, you can very easily get confused. I mean, I was confused for a good decade, which is a hell of a long time.
Spy Hunter says, he says that, number one, he's fascinated by all the things you've talked about tonight. He's very, very interested in the idea of straw man and some of the other things that we've mentioned, sovereignty, as well as the United States being a corporation. He wants me to ask why your name is in all capital letters if you go into traffic court for a ticket, or if you're assigned an infraction.
Sure, I'm getting into that. So what they're charging is your estate. And what a lot of people get wrong is, not wrong per se, but I just don't like the term straw man. Not to say it isn't technically correct, because in a certain way it is, but here's the thing. They don't create a separate corporation for you. That's where anybody that teaches you that is automatically incorrect. There's no separate corporation that they're charging. They're charging your estate, because your estate has been abandoned. Now, the name of your estate is that which is printed on your birth certificate. Now, most these days, it's usually all in capital letters, but not always. Okay. Uh-huh. So what they do is, when you go into traffic court, it's the creation of a trust. They literally create a trust and then run the court case through that. It's called a constructive trust. So basically what happens is that, okay, they know your state's abandoned. Okay, great. They create a constructive trust. That's the name of the court. That's the name that's in the court case. That's the name of the constructive trust. And sometimes it'll be your last name first, like it'll be Doe, comma, John Henry. Sometimes it'll be John Henry Doe. Sometimes it'll just be John Doe, whatever. But the name of the court case is a constructive trust. The name of the estate is what is printed upon your birth certificate. So when you go into a court after you've done the vocational science for status doc set and got your status corrected and taken care of all these things, when you go into court, you can stand there as the executor of your estate. Now, the term executor is basically a barbarism to Roman civil law. They really can't deal with it. What they're doing is they're being what's called special administrators. And if you look it up in the Uniform Probate Code, you'll see that all judges are special administrators. Okay, so what the fuck are they administering? They're administering the res of your estate, but they've placed it into a constructive trust, which then they bond, because all court cases are bonded. And what most people don't realize is that, unless you actually got thrown in jail and you had to sign a jail bond when you got out, what most people don't realize is that the attorney will create the bond in your estate name to bond the case. And they do this by power of attorney. Why? Because you're still a fucking infant. And we have proof, because we've FOIA'd bond records from court cases, and it shows that the attorney was the one that went and created the bond for the court case in the name, and they bond in New York or wherever else. And what we do is we say, okay, fuckers, you know, play that game. We get a hold of the bonding company, and then the man who's the executor says, hey, bonding company, I see that there's a bond in my estate name. And they're like, yeah. Well, I'd like that canceled. Okay. And then they cancel the bond. Then you go back to the court and say, well, Your Honor, all the bonds have been canceled on this case. Watch what the judge does. They will flip the fuck out, because those bonds are the only thing that protects them in their fraudulent goings on as to what they're doing. It's limited. It's where they get their limited liability from. So if you take that away from them, it's now full 100% liability for the damages that they're actually causing to a sovereign. That's a problem. They don't like to fuck with that, because that liability literally is unlimited. And not to mention it's common law theft, and it's probate fraud, and you know, you can hit them with all these things, but you can do it then in a court of record, because you are. You have capacity. You have standing. Otherwise, you don't have standing. You're just there as an infant. All these presumptions are against you, and they're going to administer your estate because you have not yet claimed it. And again, this gets back to will, because your will has been probated. Because after 7 years, presumption of death kicks in. They probate your will. They don't tell you about it, but they probate your will, and they create all this all these securities on the back of your ass. That aspect of what the straw man, in a sense, what the straw man is, even though I don't like that term, it's basically your estate.
You know, it's funny, because like part of me thinks that you should be a lawyer, and then immediately I think, well, if you did that, you would be putting yourself under the authority and the administration of exactly what you're talking about. Like you should be able to argue your own cases in court. You should be able to practice law on your own behalf or on somebody else's, but that's a rigged game too, right? Like if you were to go become a lawyer, you would not be able to do what you're doing, could you?
Well, here's the thing. There's a vast difference between a lawyer and an attorney. A lawyer simply means know the law. So yes, I consider myself a lawyer.
Ah.
An attorney is one who, and if you want to look up this word, look up the word attern. The word attern means to take from one and give to another. That's what an attorney is, okay? And attorneys are the ones that swear an oath and allegiance to the Bar Association. They've pledged their estates to the bar permanently, so they can never come back, because the bar won't let them one-off. And second, it's a whole different ball game on that side. So, and yes, you can definitely run your own case. As long as you just can't run somebody else's case, because then you'd be acting as I said, like a special administrator, or you'd be acting as in a sense, like a guardian, even though.
Yeah, because we're kids, right? You're infants.
Yep. So you can't do that for somebody else, but you can do it for yourself as long as your status is corrected.
This is incredible. So basically we all have to accept pretty quickly that just about everything that we believe as lawful, legal, or you know, the system that we believe in is pretty much a fiction of the imagination, which has been bolstered by some deception, and really these guys are running around like sorcerers using magic spells and magic words and other things to simply deprive you of property and ultimately life, right? Like they don't really, there's no end to the damage they want to do to us. Is there, there's no stopping point for them.
No, there, no. The one world order is exactly that. It's every single blade of grass, every bit of the world, and every single human being under their slave control. Yes.
That's pretty ominous. I mean, so they've built the structures of power that they bind themselves to, and then they use them to bind us. It's like they build a cage around us while they're mumbling and doing weird shit and raping kids, do they want us to feel powerless? What, I mean, obviously, like you said, if you went in and revoked your bond or whatever, like that would piss the judge off. So basically, like the judge knows, doesn't want you to know or to act on certain knowledge that you may have about who you are. This is ubiquitous throughout the entire world too, as part of the theme, right? They don't want you to know what power you actually have.
That's true.
So that's, you know, not just, you know, the potential power to, you know, to become sovereign, but also, I mean, obviously, you know, we're doing it right now. We're spreading the word to people that are out there listening. They're going to go look into this stuff. They're going to talk to other people about it. You know, these ideas become things eventually, but they're really worried about us all working together. Like they're worried about us all becoming aware of what's happening and begin to collaborate and have these conversations, even though they, I mean, so, you know, they control the world. They've got all the money in the world, and most of us can't drive from here to, you know, to Bakersfield.
It's not about money anymore. It hasn't been about money for a very long period of time. Every single nation that has a central bank, whether it's a republic or not, is basically under their control because of how law connects to the way that you pay for something, whether you actually have the right to title or not. And make no mistake, this is about title, it's about will, and it's definitely about the total control of every single nation. And that's why the few nations that still don't have a central bank are the ones that didn't. They were the ones that got taken out first, like Iraq and Libya. And, you know, they still want to try and take out North Korea, but good luck with that. You know, that they were deemed the axis of evil. Why? Because they were the only ones that didn't have a fucking filthy Rothschild bank in them. That's the reason. So, yes, the system is global. And again, it all connects into the IMF with the special drawing rights.
Do you feel Russia is on their side, or do you feel like Russia is trying to fight against the old?
I think Putin, having, you know, Alexander Solzhenitsyn as one of his mentors, I think understands quite a bit what's going on. Doesn't want to ever go back to what they had. Is well aware of his own history. Is well aware of what the Bolsheviks did, where they came from, who they were, who funded them, Wall Street and the rest of them. And wants, you know, and is absolutely against it. Now, to what extent he's going to be able to keep these fucks off of him, I don't know. I hope forever, because, you know, as far as Russia is concerned and the Russian people, I have nothing but love for all of them. In fact, if it wasn't for Russia, particularly Russia's Navy, we wouldn't be a country technically. So, the Tsar, we owe everything we are here to the Russian people and what they did for us way back when. And I would very much like to make sure that we honor that debt and do not let America fall, meaning like completely fall, because this is the last country where not only can we reverse this, but it's also the last country where everybody is armed, aside from Sweden,
right?
Because they actually have laws that say that you have to own a weapon. But of course, what are they doing? They're protecting all of the Rothschild banks that are sitting in Switzerland. But anyway, I don't get into that. So
I brought that up before, dude. Switzerland are bastards, right? Like they watched everybody die, you know, and they just sat there with the gold in the castle, right?
Yeah, because that's how the Rothschilds set them up. Yeah, exactly. But Switzerland aside, we are the last best vestige of hope to turn the tide in the entire world. And they know it. They know they have to take us out before they can have their one world order. And it sure as fuck isn't going to be easy, because I'm, for one, am not forgetting what they've done. And I'm, for one, making sure that everybody else learns and gets out of the system and maintains their sovereignty. Now, here's the thing about something I should explain about sovereignty. There's basically a maxim of law that states, you know, once you're sovereign, once a sovereign, always a sovereign. So you're not contracting away your sovereignty. That literally cannot happen. And there's a really interesting court case that the Supreme Court did a long time ago. It was some mining company versus Chikarella, which is an Indian tribe. And so the corporation went onto their land, and the tribe gave them the capacity to take minerals off of their land. And they said, okay, fine. And they entered into a contract. Corporation came on, started work and whatever. And then the tribal elders were like, you know what we should do? We should create an extraction tax. I did. And then the corporation screamed to high hell, and it got all the way to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, sorry, they're sovereign. They have the right to tax. You don't like it? Leave their land. So just because they signed a contract with them to do XYZ doesn't mean that the tribe automatically lost its sovereignty.
Right.
And the Supreme Court literally said, and I, you know, quite correctly, that the idea that one could lose their sovereignty by failing to basically reserve it within a contract turns the concept of sovereignty on its head. That's what the Supreme Court said. So we haven't lost our sovereignty. What we're doing is we're exchanging our unalienable rights for civil rights, and we've abandoned our estates. All we have to do is pick them up again.
This is incredibly fascinating, guys. What's up, G-Man? I see him hanging out over at FTJ Media. We're hanging out here with the Vocational Science of Freedom. And I normally book guests, and I usually try to keep them for a couple of hours. Your couple of hours is over in about 20 minutes or so, but I'm hoping that we get a chance to talk a little bit longer than that, just because this is a cliffhanger. Like, I don't even want to interrupt you, which is very not normal for me, because because what you're saying is so fascinating. I often hear people say there's no unexplored land left, and I'm like, what about, you know, the country we live in? And you're proving me right. Like, like, we have no idea what this whole fiction is, what this structure is, and what we've been doing. And it's exactly that. Like we're running around using the wrong language, using the wrong organ for the wrong function. You know, everything's just like, it's all, we must look like clowns to our founding fathers. If they were able to see
well,
now.
They certainly would not be pleased, because as old Ben put it, when they came out of the Constitutional Convention, you know, some woman asked him on the street, well, what form of governance have you given us? And Ben said, a republic, if you can keep it.
I mean,
that's the problem.
Active keeping. Yeah.
And there's something else I'd like to bring up. If you could type this into a browser, type in 1 USC subsection 8, and then the word person. And if you'll excuse me for 1 minute, I take like a little like 3 minute intermittent here while you're doing that.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I will be right back.
Yeah, man, take all the time that you need. No hurries, no worries. We're always just hanging out here, man, on the Big Brain Show. Incredible guest, all fascinating stuff, very compelling too. Very good at teaching this stuff. But let's see. Oh, that was the other thing I looked up. The word person. Oh, this is Cornell Law. Let's see. We're going to let Bill still read this.
One U.S. Code SS8, person, human being, thing, child, and it individual, as including born alive infant. U.S. Code, Prev or Next. A. In determining the meaning of any act of Congress or of any ruling, regulation, or interpretation of the various administrative bureaus and agencies of the United States, the words person, person, human being, Kali, and child, and it, individual, shall include every infant member of the species Homo sapiens who is born alive at any stage of development. B. As used in this section, the term born alive with respect to a member of the species Homo sapiens means the complete expulsion or extraction from his or her mother of that member at any stage of development, who after such expulsion or extraction breathes or has a beating heart, pulsation of the umbilical cord, or definite movement of voluntary muscles, regardless of whether the umbilical cord has been cut, and regardless of whether the expulsion or extraction occurs as a result of natural or induced labor, cesarean section, induced abortion.
Okay, so... okay, I think I can read this. Can you hear me? Okay. No, you're good too. Okay, so the first point, A. So this is the definition of person in the United States Code. And to prove my point as to what, you know, what I was talking about regarding what you were bringing up too about words, how they use words against us. So yes. If you want to click on the code again, I want to walk you through it and show you like word for word, like what they're doing in that code.
Okay. So you want me to play those again?
Yeah, just bring it up. I just need to read. Yep, I just need to read the first part. Okay, so in determining the meaning of any act of Congress or of any ruling, regulation, or interpretation of the various administrative bureaus and agencies of the United States, the words person, human being, child, and individual shall include every infant member of the species Homo sapien who is born alive at any stage of development. Okay, there's something extremely important about statutory and code construction. Mm-hmm. There's also a maxim that everybody needs to understand. There is a maxim of law that states the inclusion of one is the exclusion of all others. That is a maxim of law. Also, when you're doing statutory construction or code construction, this is the Jew attorney doing this to you now. When they use the word shall include, it does not mean and also. So if, say, a statute said trees include oak elms, that would mean that a pine tree is not a tree. So when they say that these words, person, human being, child, and individual, shall include every infant member of the species Homo sapien, they are stating that every single fucking law of any act of Congress, any ruling, regulation, or interpretation of the various administrative bureaus and agencies of the United States, those words mean an infant. They're not talking about people. People are sovereign because we, the people, ordained and established. A person is an infant. So realize that.
Infantry.
And they're telling it to you right there in your face.
I wonder if that's why they call soldiers infantry. Fucking crazy, dude. Like they're the guys that go in and get blown up, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, what was it? Kissinger, the filthy ass fucking Jew, said something that military men are nothing but dumb animals to be slaughtered or something like that. It's probably, that's not the exact quote, but it certainly was not nice.
Big shout out to Jared Martins. He sent us $10. He says, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children because the beauty of the white Aryan woman must not perish from the earth. He is citing David Lane. And those were the 14, I guess the 14 words, right, is about securing, you know, a future and an existence.
Yeah, talking about future and existence, the first laws that were ever laid down for immigration into America specifically stated that you had to be white and you had to be of good character. And that's how it was written. So, yeah, that's what we're supposed to have here, a white nation. That's what the Founding Fathers set up. That's what they wanted. Right, done deal. You can go find it in the record. I'm not making it up. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
And the Jews were like, well, if these people have an entire continent to themselves, well, at least the middle of one, and they are all sovereign, they're all self-reliant, we're going to have one hell of a problem when the rest of the world wakes up and says, hey, wait a second, I'd rather live like that. Fuck this king. Fuck this judge. Fuck your law. I want to be sovereign too. And they couldn't have that, which is very much what the secret Treaty of Verona was all about. But I don't want to jump down a really deep rabbit hole. They've all been working together, meaning world Jewry, to destroy and take over America and take it back, which is exactly what the Rothschilds and particularly Cecil Rhodes is all about. Have you ever heard of a Rhodes Scholar?
Yes, the Rhodes Scholar, right? Very, very coveted title.
Rhodes Scholars. Yep, all Rhodes Scholars come from that aspect of the Cecil Rhodes Trust that he set up after he died. And if nobody knows who Cecil Rhodes is, he was the guy that set up like the gold mine and diamond mines in South Africa and various different other places. And he got money originally from Rothschild to do that. And then when he died, which you can read his last will and testament, he set up this trust to be able to create situations wherein the perpetuation of returning America back under English control was his sole goal with that trust and with his will. And so you have what's called Rhodes Scholars. So Rachel Maddow is a Rhodes Scholar. Bill Clinton is a Rhodes Scholar. And all of these Rhodes Scholars are focusing on one fucking thing, to destroy America and bring it back under English control. That's their purpose, as is the purpose of all of the think tanks that are out there, like the Club of Rome and the Council on Foreign Relations, which was also a creature of Cecil Rhodes Trust, and even the foundations like the Carnegie Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation. Those foundations were set up, and what they do is they steer education to dumb us down,
yes,
take away the understanding of what we should be learning about our own history.
Yeah, Rockefeller fucked up a lot of things, right? Like he's in education, medicine, and of course energy.
Yeah, all the pharmaceuticals, yep, yeah. And energy, yep, all of it, yep. Yeah, you can thank the creation of the medical mafia basically on Rockefeller, yeah.
Just think about how energy has been used to oppress people around the world. You know, electricity itself it's the biggest industry. It was the biggest industry in the world. I'd say maybe now it's not, but you know, energy, like everybody gets charged for every drop of gas, every minute of light, you know. It's become a meme. Like, it's more than a meme. It's a psychic attack. It's been in our psyche forever. But the idea that you have to pay somebody for power. Yeah.
Yep. And oil is in everything. Oil is in every single tire that's on every single car. It's in every single piece of plastic. It's in every single computer that each one of us are using. It's in pharmaceuticals. It's in everything in the medical industry. You know, go on as long as you want to ad infinitum. It's crazy.
Yeah. So what do you do to stay sane in a crazy world, sir? Do you have any pastimes that you like to use to ground yourself or to kind of remind yourself that this world isn't normal and we don't usually live this way?
I've got several. I'm a Taoist, so I understand and have to go out and connect with nature from time to time. I grew up pretty much out in the woods, only child, and got very connected with nature from a very young age and have always that's always been my grounding rod, if you will. And I also try and get out and stay fit as much as I can. I do a lot of bike riding because I like to get out and get around and about, but I don't necessarily like to drive around just to do it because it's not the same thing. And then as far as relaxation, as far as hanging out, that's the Wednesday night roundtables that we do at VSOF, where I'm not really trying to teach anything. We're just all sharing information, just hanging out and being in the community, which is good to have because no man's an island. And doing the research that I do is just fun for me. Like, I don't consider it to be like something, oh, I got to get up today and I got to do this, I got to do that. Like it's some sort of gnawing thing in the back of my head. I get up and I thought, oh yeah, the treatise that I found that one thing in the other day, I got to put that into such and such so I remember it. Like, that's how I wake up in the morning. Like, actually enjoying tearing apart the facade and piecing together the puzzle of what the dark Luciferian occultists have done to this world and then sharing it with others so they can go, holy shit, you're right. I go, thank you. Well, I didn't do it to, you know, get some ego aspect to say that I'm right. I'm just saying that, look, I found it. Like, every day I wake up, I'm like, what is over the next hill as far as knowledge that I don't yet know? That's what keeps me going. And you said, what I do to relax. I know that's not exactly the aspect of relaxing.
Well, if that's relaxing for you, maybe, you know, like,
it's a fun thing because you're like, oh, what is over the next hill? I don't know. Go climb over it.
I think to a lot of this can be mischaracterized maybe over time, or maybe it's just a lack of discipline, but this can seem like a chore sometimes. And a lot of times I hear people talk about just the emergent white consciousness, right? The emergent Aryan consciousness that's coming forth is a bit of a burden, at least to hear some people, you know, kind of reminisce about it. But I think that you've got a good point in that this really is our purpose, right? And so naturally it would be fulfilling and enjoyable at times, and sometimes profoundly powerful. But you had to be open to the experience, right? You can't be like resisting it all the time.
No, exactly. And it also, you know, some of the other things that I practice and follow and pay attention to, I mean, the Celtic Druidic nature of what natural law is and understanding it through that you help your tribe first. That's the reason why I do this. I don't, you know, do it for me. I make sure that my tribe is doing well. Because if my tribe isn't doing well, I'm not going to be doing well. That's for damn sure. Yep. So it's your sovereignty first, and the first ring around is everything that's you. The first one just outside of sovereignty. And then outside of that, that's family. And then outside of that, that's community. That's your tribe. And then outside of that would be your state. And in the self-awareness quadrant, it would literally be your self-awareness and your relationship with the entire universe, not just this little ball of rock that happens to be spinning around a star in a fairly unimportant galaxy in billions and billions of galaxies. I mean, what is your relationship to the universe? How do you see your journey?
Earth's flat. I'm in the middle. That's right. Hey, man, if it's a ball, though, we're all on top of it, aren't we?
Wherever you are, you're on top.
You know, it's funny. The Newtonian thing, I mean, I'm not necessarily the flat earthers kind of embarrassed me a little bit. I mean, but some of them are, hey, if you can spit a good game of it, I'll appreciate that, though. But
I don't know what's up with them. I honestly sometimes think that's a CIA, like,
the Copernican psyop thing is so hopeless, though, isn't it? Like, you know, the far flung arm of the spiral galaxy numbered 6,000,000,000,032. And, you know, and all, it's just, isn't that as decentralized as you can be, probably, is like the spinning solar system kind of theory. Like, whatever it is, it's obviously hard for us to, you know, to take in with our senses. So to a little degree, we have to kind of trust in some things, right? Do you trust in anything? Is there anything that you trust in or that you kind of have faith in? And I'm not necessarily just prodding you to see if you're religious or anything, but
Do you, yeah, I mean, I trust, you believe in natural law.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I trust natural law. And in Taoism, the focus of Taoism is natural law. It's the focus that you should always uphold natural law wherever you are.
Like you just
in the
answered
universe.
That. I think that's important to note is usually I find the people that go the hardest in their own way, they're the most religious people. They're the ones that are really truly dedicated on a soul level to what they're doing. And they do it naturally and they do it well and they inspire the rest of us to kind of do it. Do you hope that somebody follows your footsteps as well and continues what you've started sometime?
Yeah, I have made sure in sharing my entire hard drive with many, many people. And I've made sure in creating the Vocational Science of Freedom Council that those men and women can be able to continue on after I'm gone. And I'd like to turn the VSOF eventually to have a physical location, you know, a physical academy where you can come and you can learn how to garden. You can learn how to build your own arms. You can learn the law. You can download whatever you want to. We can have classes there. You can hang out for a while. You can help do this or that and truly, or just hang out and meditate, whatever you want to do, or pray to whatever God you want to pray to. Don't care. Because your religion is yours and that's your connection, your self-awareness. It's not mine, it's yours. It's not, I'm not here to tell you what that should be. I'm just here to tell you that you should probably look into it and do some soul searching is to figure out what it is that you believe in. Because before I studied law, I studied every single religion on this planet, practically. I used to sit for hours on end in Barnes & Noble's just in the religious section and flip through every single fucking book that was in there.
Wow.
Like, all right, what do these people believe? What do these believe? What do that believe? And there's only three ways that mankind has ever truly seen the universe. And they're this. So one way is to see the universe as a construct. Basically, God is the great, you know, watchmaker. And those religions are Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. They see God as like the great architect. You know, he built all this, right? Then you have the way of looking at the universe that there is nothing that is not God. That everything basically is like God pretending to be something else for a little while to have some fun. And that you're God, I'm God, everybody's God, every animal, everything.
Peekaboo, peekaboo. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a good thing. That's how Buddhists and how the Indian religions, more, you know, basically Buddhism is basically Hinduism stripped down for export.
And some are like universalists, some are like dualists.
And they see God as like the big actor, right? It's all an act. It's all play. Okay, so that's the second way. And then the third way is how the Taoists see the universe. The Taoists see the universe as an organism, one single organism that is conscious of itself because we are conscious of it. We are the consciousness of the universe as part of the organism. And that's always appealed to me much better because then when I see something that's like a cancer in the organism, I go kill it. I don't hesitate because it's destroying the organism. It's going against natural law. Well, no, that's not going to happen on my watch. Thank you very much. Fuck you.
This is so fucking based.
That's why I'm a Taoist. So, I mean, and in a sense, also, like I said, you know, Celtic Druidic as well. Because the belief systems are really not that much different when you really get down and study them all.
Let's see here. I'm keeping an eye on the time just because I excuse me. I know that I burned up all 2 hours of your time with like ridiculous questions, and you probably didn't get to talk about 10% of the things that you've covered in your material that's online in your school. And all these other, you know, and all the other ways that people can get stuff from you. You've actually dedicated a lot of effort and energy, man, into making things accessible, which I think is, I mean, you'd say, you know, it's my job, probably wouldn't want any special,
you know, accolade for it. But I got to say, man, it's a one in a million thing to find somebody that makes content, that makes thoughtful content that they want to have value for people that they don't even know. You know what I mean? It's not, it shouldn't be. It should be like everybody should be like, yeah, 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 tell me something else. Like the sky's blue. But actually, it is rare. And there are so few people that are really fighting this on kind of the level that you are, which is all out. I hope you do.
Yeah, well, I mean, you too. I mean, what you do is extremely important.
I take a lot less care of myself.
Well, I tell you what, one of the great things that I like that you put out are the audiobooks. I've really learned a lot and wouldn't have probably been able to do so otherwise had you not created them and put them out for people. It's really important. But I do agree with you that it's kind of a few and far between group of men that do this. You know, like Carl's one of them, the gentleman you had on, you know, just the other day. Same kind of idea. Like he's dedicated into walking in truth, finding the truth, and digging as deep as he needs to go to get it right.
Yeah.
And that's important because you can't do a half-assed job when your life is literally in the balance. That's not an option. And neither is failure.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And you know what's been crazy is like when you follow a group of people or you there are certain examples or motivations for you to come, you know, our way to for people to wake up and become aware of these powers and how they operate, but also to fight back against them, you know, which is massive. There are a lot of people on our side that are derailing this as well. They're not bringing people along, and we see so many people trying to deracinate the conversation or trying to, you know, trying to kind of divert the attention away from the real cause of things to, you know, to obvious distractions, straw men, all kinds of things. They've used every form of propaganda, every form of deception against us. The truth is really the only thing that will solve any of these problems. And at the best you can do is kind of present what truth you do have to people who might be interested. And you know, since there is a matter of will involved, you know, I dig how you are, you know, your free will respecter, right? You've mentioned quite a few times this interview how if this is what you want to do, then you're welcome to do that. I'm a firm believer in that principle, right? And people, I think, often overlook that. And I've taken a lot of L's over like allowing people free will, but if we don't have that, then we don't really have a nation or a race to save. Like there's those principles are part of our you know, our spiritual our spiritual manifestation into this, you know, into this world. So those things we'll always have to have. They're a part of us.
That's true. And our collective will as a people is extremely important, and it's again like what you said, it's based upon, unfortunately at the moment, a lot of propaganda, a lot of lies,
and individuals.
A lot of fuckery from an evil, diabolical group of people that are hell bent on controlling the entire world and everyone in it. And because that's a fact, I see the day coming when all of the peoples of the world rise up against them. And probably it'll happen very quickly because now we're all online and now we can all talk to each other. I can talk to somebody in Japan. They can talk to me. They can send me something. Something that happens in Japan can land in my inbox in a fraction of a second. Okay, let's see what happens when the entire world says, fuck you.
Yeah.
That's going to be a whole different ball of wax.
They've certainly engineered themselves into quite a pickle. And
yes,
I do believe a lot of things are happening that can't be reversed. Now, I think we're well on our way to hopefully the last time, but that's a stupid thing to say after 109 times, isn't it?
I don't know. There's a weird thing about I feel there's a weird thing about biblical end of day sort of stuff that's written down. And are they following that playbook? I don't know. But when you look at that in like all of the Abrahamic religions, they all have this sense of like, okay, there's going to be this time where like everything goes to shit and like there's going to be wars and la, 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 la. Okay, well, what are we warring against? There's only two sides. There's good and evil. So who's going to be stupid enough to be on the evil side is always what I have in the back of my head. So that's the optimism that I always carry with me. I'm like, how could somebody willfully be on the side of evil? Now, they could be coerced, possibly, to doing evil acts for a short period of time. But once they realize that what they're doing, well, then their conscience should kick in and they'll say, no, I don't do that anymore. Unless they're a biological psychopath, then okay, that's a whole other story. Those people literally do not have the capacity for empathy, which of course a lot of them are. They are biological psychopaths, and I understand that. There's no saving them ever. But what they're doing is they're teaching, you know, the secondary psychopathy. And secondary psychopathy, once looked into, and you go, wait a second, this is psychopathic. You do not care about human life. Or any life for that matter. So how the, can I possibly be on the side of that? I can't, I won't, and I refuse to. And so I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to use your filthy script. I'm not going to pay your taxes. I'm not going to give you anything that I don't consent to. And I'm not going to enter into contracts with you. And I'm not going to go along with your fucking games. Because they're only there to help you be a parasite on my people and the entire planet. And sorry, that's not something I can go along with.
I agree. I agree 100%. It's just, it's so strange that it's such a difficult thing for some people to see, but it's once you've seen even a little bit of it, it becomes so clear and so right out there in front of your face. And there's really no end to that experience of realizing more and more things that are just almost shocking. Like you become very good at spotting things that you would not have noticed before. And I guess that's, you know, part of this noticing thing. We certainly have a talent for it. And you have a real talent for putting these ideas not only into really concise language, but also being a very well articulate and well-spoken individual. Man, you're a great teacher. And I feel like I've learned something tonight. That was the last damn thing I thought I was going to do today. You know, was learn a whole lot, but I'm blown away, and I apologize if my questions suck, because I'm just sitting here listening to you and just want you to keep talking, because you're so fucking right on so many things, and literally I don't feel stupid very often, right? But I feel stupid sometimes when I realize there's a lot of things that we just don't know, we haven't looked into them, you know, and thank goodness somebody has, right? We should take advantage of that.
That's part of the reason why I gave you a cheat sheet.
Yeah. I didn't even look at those, did I? I didn't even look at the questions tonight.
That's fine. You do it next time.
He says, man, you want me? He's like, I should make some questions. I'm like, yeah, knock yourself out, man. Go ahead. I've always done all these shows off the cuff, and I think they're just – it's good to have them, though, the questions, because I'll ask those to Night Nation Review next week.
Yeah, I just gave them to you as a professional courtesy, because if I'm going to come on a show, either they have – like sometimes people will have a list of questions and be like, are these okay for me to ask you? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Or they'll say, do you have any questions that you want me to ask you? And I'll like say, yeah, sure. And that's kind of something that you can do with people before they come on, and it allows them to determine kind of what they want to talk about or not. Or if you say, well, do you mind if I give you this list of questions? Like you can take the list that I gave you and just, you know, make that be your template and then give it to the next guest and the next guest and be like, are these things that would be okay for me to ask you? Because they were very basic and just open-ended. And
I did that like twice, bro. I did that twice. And, you know, after that I was done. I was over it. You know, after like 60 people don't get back to you, you're just like, fuck all you niggers, dude. I'm not – fuck all you guys. I'll find someone else to come on my show. I don't care.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Warren. Yeah. He doesn't even know me. I'm sitting here like being all rude. But, I mean, the floor is obviously yours. We're way into overtime, at least as far as like, I'm sure you don't want to hang out here forever. But
is there anything that, like, I don't know, peruse chat. Is there anything that anybody asked, like any direct questions?
I had some, he had a little glazing going on, you know, which was just, you know, attaboy. He had some attaboy in there. And there were a couple honestly, our big brain shows don't have a lot of questions because our guests don't really leave a lot
to be asked. I mean, they're very thorough. They tend to answer questions. I don't even have to ask questions most interviews because you go right to the next. If I were to write down what I was going to talk about, you would have segued all of those for me. I wouldn't have even had to bring them up. So all the good ones happen that way. If you guys do have any questions, though, in the chat, we've got a little bit of time. And luckily, our guest is not in that big a hurry. And that's fantastic because Flood will just blow right by any questions. He'll blow by super chats because I get really involved in the conversation, I guess. And sometimes I'll kind of lose my concentration. Sometimes I'll just turn around. The whole show's been offline for 30 minutes and I've been just hitting the laugh track button. Yeah. It happens.
Yeah, I'm kind of scrolling through Rumble.
I got a ton of questions I could still ask, but they're all going to lead into like longer and bigger things.
Well, that's fine. I mean, like you said, I don't particularly have any place to go. I mean, I can hang out for as long as you want, or you can cut me off. We can do it another day. That's fine too.
Oh yeah. Well, you're definitely going to get cut off eventually, but shit, Carl, I think the longest show I've done is 5 or 6 hours with Dave or G-Man. G-Man's a monster too. You guys, any questions that you might have? I would ask a lot of people when you talk about silver and gold, and at least as far as that being specie, I've heard that mentioned a lot of times. Of course, all of the money that we have is not worth the material that it's made out of. But do you have any thoughts on cryptocurrency or see any role for it?
Yeah, okay, so I'm sure we can go there. I got a guy in the VSOF who's really good at crypto and knows like everything about it. And because for a long time I wanted to be able to set up a wallet and get into it as being able to just, again, have something that's not controlled by central banks. And I think it's a good way for private people to exchange value with each other, as long as the cryptocurrency isn't something that can be highly manipulated or isn't some, you know, new little fake coin that pops up out of nowhere that somebody's just trying to make a bunch of money off of and then, you know, bump it. I think it has validity for that reason. However, I wouldn't consider crypto to be any sort of actual storage of wealth. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One, that the sun could decide to send a 2x solar flare this direction, slam into the earth, and we don't have electricity anymore. Well, how good's your crypto wallet then? Well, not much. But if you have physical gold and silver and you own it and it's on your person, well, then okay, fine. It's at your home. It's in your safe. Done deal. Then you can exchange it for whatever if shit really hits the fan. Now, the other thing is that gold the other day just hit 3,350, which was the highest it's ever been.
Yeah, all time.
And I can only remember something like a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a couple months ago, it had just cracked 3,000. And everybody's, oh my God, cracked 3,000. Well, that's showing that their system is collapsing.
It seems to be falling apart. I think that's one of the reasons I think people are a little excited about crypto, but that's been my thought as well. Is if it's something that's controlled by Jews, if the coin itself is a meme coin, or it's controlled by Jews, or it's issued and not mined. If it's issued and not, I should just say fairly acquired, then it's going to be used to undermine, tokens that aren't. So like Bitcoin may have been the first one out of the gate. And it may not be very useful as a network, but it's the one that's worth 100,000 per token based on rarity and et cetera, et cetera. But basically just there's a lot of speculation in the damn market, and none of these coins have cash to cover, what coin is out there, right? Like, so they're, none of them are actually, they're all inflated.
I agree with you with Bitcoin, and I think Ethereum is probably the most like solid exchange coin, meaning like the one that people should probably use the most of, if they were going to do actual exchanges with people, which is what I set up. I made sure that I set up a Bitcoin and an Ethereum. I forget the last one that he suggested that I do. I see that you've got Monero, Doge.
Yeah, XRP. Monero's the best.
It might have been XRP that he suggested to me. I think that might have been the other one.
It's pretty hot right now. It's had a
yeah.
It's probably the one with the most multiplication potential, right? In the near future, if there's there may not be another Bitcoin, but if there's going to be one that goes up several hundreds or thousands of percent, it's most likely to be XRP in the near future. Just because of the deregulation and some of the bank deals that they've been doing behind the scenes. But to anybody, I can go out there and I tell everybody, do your own research. I'm certainly not a financial expert or a crypto expert, but I love the idea of a decentralized currency. But, of course, the first thing we did with all of those currencies is we speculated on them. And so now they're all out of whack, right? Now they're all not worth what they're valued at. And people are heavily invested in them.
Well, that's the speculation with silver itself. The silver market has been artificially suppressed by JP Morgan for decades and decades because they don't want silver to actually show its true value because it would scare the fuck out of everybody and everybody would run to it and they'd no longer pick up a Federal Reserve note. They'd start wiping their asses with them, which is pretty much all they're fucking worth for anyway. I see that Slippo asked a question. He said, what kind of opposition to your ideas have you encountered? Have you had glow ops run on you? No, I've never had fucking glowies. Well, I maybe had a few try, but I obviously realized they were and I didn't let them in. But opposition to my ideas, not much of any really, because the people that teach this kind of information that teach it incorrectly, and I can name names because I don't give a fuck what they think one way or the other. So people like Carl Lentz, Anna von Reitz, which is actually not her name. She's actually Jewish. It's like Wachowski or something. Carl Lentz, Anna von Dipshit, Bobby, what is that the guy's name? No, I was about to say Bobby Fischer. That's not right. David Strait. Anyway, the Bobby guy is like a David Strait clone. And there's been some other idiots that have literally come around and basically they teach half the truth, and most of the shit that they get that's correct they got from me anyway. And then the rest of it they either make up and they're trying to make money or they're trying to get fame. They want people to come to them to ask them questions that feel important or whatever.
Did you ever have Milky in your class? Was it Bellicose ever there? Ha ha, fuck you, Milky.
No, I never had anyone name that.
He was like one of the first people that tried to like give me shit, I think, when I was starting up, and he was the first guy like, Dead Flood's a Jew. But he was suing other pro whites in the scene, I think at that time. I think he took Joe to court or something. But, there's a lot of this fuckery that happens on our side. You got to be careful.
Yeah, I don't understand why that is. I mean, the law community is not, like, vindictive like that. Like, they don't go after each other. I just warn people as to who not to follow and who not to pay attention to. But then I've had a lot of people come to me and say, hey, you do great work. I'll feel great to promote your stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. That's cool. One of those people is Sovereign Education Defense Ministry. I've exchanged hard drives with him. Beattraffictickets.com, that guy that runs that site. He's like, yeah, your stuff's really great. I'll put you up on my website. I'm like, sure. Great. No problem. And then as far as my mentors are concerned, like the people I actually learned from, which we didn't really get into. So I can talk about that for a second.
Sure.
So my mentors are Bill Thornton, who runs 1215.org. And 1215.org is probably the best place to learn about how the common law is supposed to work, like correctly. I've talked with Bill multiple times. He's getting pretty old. I don't know if he's still living because he's really getting up there in age. And so aside from Bill, Roger Elvick, who is one of the older guys, who I don't think Roger's around anymore either. Roger used to teach people about the understanding. Yeah, that's it. Roger used to teach people about the understanding of the law merchant and because his he came from a banking family. So he knew all this backside of all this fuckery, and he'd explain to people what was going on, and they just wouldn't get it because it was so heavy with vocabulary, so heavy with nuance and illusion, that if you didn't understand like some of the foundation, it was really hard to follow Roger. But as Bill Thornton once said, you know, didn't matter what Roger Ovick said, as crazy as it was, I could never prove him wrong. So there's Roger Ovick, and then another good mentor of mine who passed just not all that long ago, about a year and a half ago, was Michael Badnarik. And Michael Badnarik was the libertarian presidential candidate back in the mid-90s. And he and I used to talk, even on a daily basis, but at least on a weekly basis. And he also helped me edit my grand jury manual, which I still have to technically finish. And he taught me more than anybody else ever did about the Constitution. And I've re-uploaded many of Michael Badnarik's classes onto my platforms, which I highly suggest that everybody go watch. If you want to specifically learn about the Constitution, the federal Constitution, he's the best guy to go to. And that's where I started to learn that. And he helped me through a lot of things that I was confused about. He also wrote a very, very good book called It's Good to Be King. Very, very good book about sovereignty, understanding your position in relation to government, and just all around really, really good guy, and spent a lot of years of his life teaching people and making them understand what this country is actually about. And then there was Steve Carr. Steve Carr was a gentleman out of Wisconsin and really good teacher, really into just all of the fuckery. Steve was the one that taught me about how evil the Jews actually are, where they come from, how many times they've gotten kicked out of, you know, countries, what they've to the law. And that was like my first experience and first like wake up pill with that. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's how they're doing this. That's how they're doing this. Okay, got it. So I learned all that from Steve, and I did a lot of work with Steve too. I worked with him in kind of editing and creating the what was called the Declaration of Allodial Lands, which is something you can do with your property after you've gotten your status corrected. You can get your property off the fucking county tax rolls. Because again, it's all about consent, and it's all about that you're asking for a service from them, whether it be schools or garbage or fire department or fucking cops, whatever. And so we did this Declaration of Allodial Lands, and we started to file them in Wisconsin, and the fucking governor of Wisconsin got so fucking pissed that he called Steve personally and said, please stop filing these. And Steve was a old ornery Australian guy. And I was privy to the call when he called, and Steve's, you know, I'm hearing him on the phone. He's like, do you fucking understand that what you're doing is fraud? Do you understand that you're stealing from people? You know what you can do. You'd fuck right off. Like, he's talking to the fucking governor of Wisconsin. I was like, holy shit. So that was fun. So Steve was a character, and was definitely fully aware of the child trafficking aspect of all this. Like, he was totally against every single aspect of family court. He would take people in droves to go into family court and fucking point at judges. And there was one time he took like 22 people or something like that in family court. And they had this thing that they did where there was like a trigger thing that basically, I wasn't there personally, but he told me about it. So Steve did this thing, like the judge was going about doing this thing, whatever. And he gave the word, and all of the people stood up at the same time in the gallery. They pointed at the judge and they said, we accuse you of treason. And the judge jumped up, ran out of his little fucking door, slammed the door, and didn't come back. And Steve walked up to the bailiff and he said, all right, you know what to do. Go arrest that fucker. Bring him back here. And the bailiff said to Steve, he said, if you would have had a few more, I would have had to. Steve and I were like, wait a second. I was like, how many do you have? He said, 23. I was like, a grand jury is 25. I'm like, that's what the bailiff was telling me. If you would have actually taken a full grand jury in there, he would have had to go arrest him. And it's interesting to know that the bailiff knows this. Like, it's not like these people don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I've always wondered they that. Know do they know?
Doing. Yeah, they know what they're doing, and they know what the highest law is. So when Steve did that and I realized what had happened, I was like, well, fuck. What we have to do is convene grand juries. Now, the grand jury is an instrument of the people. It's called the fourth branch of government. Nobody ever learns about it anymore. It used to be something that used to be taught in one of our schoolhouses, the importance of being in a grand jury and knowing what that is. So where does it come from? It comes from the Magna Carta. So that was written in 1215 AD. Mm-hmm. King John does all of his fuckery. The barons are like, you know what? We've had enough of your shit. They cornered him at Runnymede and said, sign this fucking document or we're going to cut your head off. King John signed the Magna Carta. The Pope at the time said, well, that's a contract under duress. You've made him sign it under duress. It's not valid. Okay, fine. Pope had a valid legal argument. But problem is, every single king since King John has signed what's called the Confirmare Chartarum, which is the confirming charter, which reconfirms the fact that the Magna Carta is the common law. And by the way, I learned all this stuff at 1250.org, by the way.
No kidding.
Yep. And so then I did a deep dive in the Magna Carta, which I've done a class on and read the whole thing and explained it. So, but in the Magna Carta is where you get the organizational structure of the grand jury. They have to be sovereign, which we all are, has to be 25. You can't have less than that. And then once a grand jury is convened, they literally take over government. And that's how it's laid down in the Magna Carta, that they take over government and they can bring their problems to the king. But if the grand jury brings their problems to the king has so many days to correct the problem, whatever it may be. And if he doesn't correct the problem, the barons get to take the king's land, take the king's castles. They just can't harm the king or put him or his family in chains. But otherwise, he can, it's called distress. He can distress the king and whatever, they can distress the king in whatever fucking way they want to. Until he does what they're demanding him to do to make right what should have been made right in the realm. Okay, so when they do that, when they actually form a grand jury, they become what's called the surety of the realm. And in American jurisprudence, it's literally the fourth branch of government, which I, you know, nobody ever hears about that anymore. But when we form a grand jury, we can do damn near whatever the fuck we want to. Now, technically, a grand jury is only an accusatory body, meaning they don't hold trial, even though there is an exception, which is called a writ of attaint, where if someone has been prosecuted incorrectly or against the law, whatever, even if it's a jury trial, the grand jury, literally, if you take a writ of attaint to the grand jury can retry the entire case in front of the full grand jury. It is a remedy that existed in colonial times in America and after. I think it was used a few times after the Constitution was created. But it's something that everybody's forgotten that we can do. So if you ever like a political prisoner in jail, and you know it's a political prisoner and there's no reason for him to be in there, you could convene a grand jury and then file a writ of attaint, and then the grand jury will demand that he be brought forward and retry the entire case. It's like the last single greatest power that exists in America is when the grand jury does that, because nothing can stop it. Nothing can come over the top of it. Not even the Supreme Court, which they've said. Technically, the Supreme Court is in, I think it was even Hale versus Hinkle, which is a really, really good case, which was a case regarding the power of the grand jury. And they said, in that case, they said, the grand jury is holding somebody in contempt because they refused to give the grand jury specific documents that they had subpoenaed from, I think it was a corporation of some sort. So the guy who was the custodian of the records at the corporation said, fuck you, I'm not going to give them to you. Grand jury said, okay. You can sit in jail for a while. So they held him in contempt, threw him in jail. The guy then filed a habeas corpus to the court and said, please let me out. And the judge said, I don't know what the fuck you want me to do. The grand jury is holding you in contempt. They're above me. Uh-huh. And it was denied. It wasn't even just denied. It couldn't even be heard.
Yeah, right. Yeah, throw it out.
Yeah, it was completely thrown out. So, yeah, so that's the power of the grand jury and the understanding of that, that it is us coming together and being the surety of the realm. And it is the most powerful thing that we can do as people, as sovereigns, but have to have standing to do so. You can't do it when you're a fucking infant. You have to claim your estate back and do the proof of life and proof of age inquiry. We do in a court of record properly at law with a judicial coroner, with the vocational science freedom status doc set. It's the only way to do it properly that I've ever found. And I had to go back through English law to even realize that the Court of Warden Liveries existed, that this is what they did, to read the SSVK-VI Act, to realize what the remedy was, to say, okay, how the fuck do we do this? Oh, wait, shit, there's no remedy here in America. Oh, surprise, surprise. I have to create it myself, right? So I had to reverse engineer everything and just, I had to do it myself because there wasn't any remedy here.
This is, it's crazy. It's almost like trying to find your way through, a maze in the dark. And
they've
given us like every disadvantage they've given us, and I think people should definitely look more into this. Definitely look more into consent and the ways that it's granted, the ways that that people manipulate you for consent. Definitely go check out VSOF's material, and you should sign up for his classes too if you're serious. If you're serious and maybe you're a father or mother, maybe you've got kids or family members that could benefit from, just these ideas. A lot of people talk about these things too. I just don't think they're maybe as well researched, or maybe they were dropouts from your class. But
I've been doing it for 30 years, like I have.
I knew a guy in my first job, and he told me that he was a sovereign, and the only thing he could prove is that they weren't taking withholdings out of his check. And I thought that was enough to make me jealous of him, honestly. But because everybody gives a third of their check to Uncle Sam, in income tax. And this guy, I thought it was strange because the company didn't do that sort of thing normally. He must have had some sort of religious exemption, or maybe he was a preacher, and maybe he was. But he was the first person I knew that basically found a way to get – and he wasn't necessarily trying to get out of paying taxes, but he found a way through which he was not liable for that taxation. And he went through the steps necessary to declare that. And then that was it. Like the company didn't fucking argue with him anymore. And nobody told him no or any of that kind of shit.
There's several people in the VSOF that no longer have any withholding taken from them either.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So that's real, and that can happen. See, I always wondered
Yeah, there's a step-by-step process that you have to do in order for that to be a valid demand upon the corporation. And some corporations will be a stickler to it, and they don't care because they don't want to get in trouble. Okay, fine. But then they're violating the law. They're violating your law by taking something from you that they don't have the right to take. And I saw that Red Baron had a question. He said, so how does Barry Satoro's removal of habeas corpus affect a human's rights to an expedient and fair trial? Okay, so let me explain what a habeas corpus is first before I get into that. So a habeas corpus is basically a family fight between courts. It's called the Great Writ of Liberty because in English jurisprudence and English history, these courts, all these different courts, like the five jurisdictions that I've referred to before, they used to fight between each other. They'd say, oh, well, the Admiralty Court's bringing me into court over here. Well, I'm going to file a habeas corpus because this should be at law. Or the Equity Court brought me in here, but this deals with substantive rights and I got to go to King's Bench, right? I want it at law. So they'd file a habeas corpus and they'd say, hey, and they'd file it in the court that they wanted to go into or that they felt the action should be in. So they'd go and they file it at King's Bench, file a habeas corpus at King's Bench to move the case over there. So King's Bench would get it. And they're like, well, a lot of the times they'd be like, this should have never been over there anyway. Case dismissed. Or if you're the plaintiff, bringing it over there, they'd be like, sure, come on over and we'll take care of it over here. Those guys should have never been dealing with that. Okay. So habeas corpus, that's how it evolved. Okay. Then later on, it became the aspect of, okay, we're going to do a habeas corpus, which literally means produce the body. And it was a way to force any court who was holding you to demand basically, literally how it's written in the constitutions, both state and federal, that you demand to know the nature and cause of the accusation against you or the charges against you. Okay.
Right.
So you say, okay, if you don't have a nature and cause, or you're not going to tell me what the nature and cause of this is, well, then you don't have one. So that was how the habeas corpus is. Most people think about how habeas corpus is being used now to say, okay, wait a second. Is this invalid what you're doing? Okay. When you're doing it like that, what you want to do is you want to file a constitutionally based habeas corpus. You never, ever, ever want to file a habeas corpus that's statutory in nature. So you do not follow the statutes. You know, well, statute ABC 123 says I have the right to bring this habeas corpus. Nope. Every single one of those is going to get denied automatically, unless it's so egregious. Well, even now, it probably won't even matter. Because it's inequity. You're a little infant asking for them to do the right thing. Well, they're never going to do the right thing. Okay. How you file a constitutionally based habeas corpus is you say, you do it in a court of record, and then you demand not to produce the body of the accused, but you demand that they produce the damaged party. And you can do that with a habeas. You can say, hey, produce the damaged party in this court. And if it's because you ran a stop sign or because you went 65 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour zone but didn't harm anybody, they cannot produce the damaged party. And the state can't be a damaged party. That's a fiction. Sorry, you're a fiction of law.
That's right.
So at law, then they would have to dismiss the charges if you did it a proper constitutionally-based habeas corpus. So when you're talking about how Barry Santoro, and if nobody knows, that's Obama, quote-unquote, removed habeas corpus, he only removed it from the standpoint of the infants and didn't allow the infants to bring such things, probably based upon certain federal bullshit that's in the Title 18, which isn't even valid law anyway. But, you know, I can get into that on another day. So it doesn't stand at all. What he did is absolutely completely irrelevant to those who are people, those who are persons and citizens of the United States. Well, then they're subject and they only have civil rights, and those rights can be removed whenever the president of said corporation decides that they should be removed based upon the infants that are presumed to be residents of the District of Columbia, because that's another presumption that they use against you. And that's part and parcel of what in the state statutes they refer to as the definition of in this state. So in the state statutes, it'll say you may not do X, Y, Z in this state. Okay. When you go and look up what the term in this state means in state statutes, it means the District of Columbia. So you're presumed to be a resident of the District of Columbia at all times, and therefore under the same jurisdiction thereof. And that is a presumption that you can easily get rid of. Because, like, if it's a traffic thing, I know a guy one time that did the most devious fucking thing I ever have ever heard of. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm stealing that one. What this mother did is he went and got a certified copy of the land patent from the BLM. That's the Bureau of Land Management, not Black Lives Matter. And then put it into the court case as evidence to say, I was not in the District of Columbia at the time and the location that this happened. This is an original copy of an original land patent, which is certified by the BLM. And this was the location that I was at. Cop, do you deny that I was at this location? No. Okay. That means that now, guess what? The state has to prove that that land that you were sitting on somehow or another became the property of the United States somewhere in between the creation of the land patent and the time that you went to court. And guess what? They can't do it. So what he literally took away from them was not subject matter jurisdiction, not in personam jurisdiction. He took away venue.
Took their standing. Yeah. They don't have standing now.
If you take away venue, you have nothing. It's like trying to charge somebody for a law that you broke in France when you've never been to France.
Yeah.
It's impossible. So that freaked them the fuck out. They totally dismissed the case and got rid of it. And we never, ever could get the record. They literally burnt them. Like, they ghosted that case. Because they were like, oh, wait, no, there's no fucking way anybody else is going to try that again. But I know it worked because I saw the case. So, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of sneaky fucking ways. Once you understand how this whole system works, there's all kinds of ways to dissect it in ways that they simply cannot cross. They just can't fuck with it because it's all based on presumption or consent or contract. Yeah, it's pretty much the three, main three. Presumption of death, presumption of infancy, contract, presumption of residency. Oh, and by the way, just to make a point on that, there's a huge difference between being a resident and being domiciled. If you're a resident of somewhere, the definition of resident, term resident, means that you're there doing business. Okay, that gets to be a commercial term. So what are the different definitions or the different, let's say, categories of how property tax is labeled? Well, you have residential, you have commercial, you have industrial, and you have agricultural. Okay. Well, they consider agricultural to be commercial because a long time ago, they had this case where, well, since farmers decide to sell their crops and they go across state lines, well, that's interstate commerce and the feds have control of it. And I was like, really? And I read that case. I was like, you fuckers. But anyway, let's put that aside for a second. Then you got
another massive theft.
Yeah, mass, unbelievable. They've been using the Commerce Clause to control everything. But I could literally spend a whole entire class on just the Commerce Clause. But let's put that like, just where it is. Say, okay, this is dealing with commerce. So they use the Commerce Clause to say, well, agricultural, okay, that's commercial. Industrial, obviously commercial. And then commercial is literally commercial. Okay, well, then what's being a residential? Well, residential, they consider commercial as well because you're saying that you're a resident. Now, if you go look up the words resident and domicile, they're two different things. You can only have one domicile, and your domicile is your homestead. That's where you belong. That's where you will go back to. That is your house, literally, meaning not just physical house, but your house as in your domain of your law under your house. Because even like back in the days, let's go back to Rome. You know, there were the various different houses of Rome, right?
And you everything was a house or
you have the house of Rothschild, you have the house of Saud, right?
All the star names were lineages, yeah.
Yep, you still have these houses out here, right, in the world. Okay, why the fuck does nobody create their own house? Well, that's what we do. We make sure that you establish your own house on the public record so that then you have standing to create what's called the law of the domicile. The law of the domicile is whatever the sovereign of that land says it is, whenever the fuck you're on it. Think about back to what I was talking about regarding the Indian case, right? Mm-hmm. They said, we're going to create an extraction tax. Corporation said, fuck you. Supreme Court said, no, fuck you. They're sovereign. They can tax you because you're on their land. Well, this is the thing. There's a difference between a domicile and a resident. So when you're saying I'm registering my land at the county and I'm a resident of, you know, whatever, Wisconsin, such and such county of Wisconsin, they say, okay, infant, you're there doing business. When you're done doing business, you'll go back to where you came from, which should be your domicile. But it's this word magic, like you said. This is the difference of how they get you. So when you sign a contract, you sign a license, you sign particularly a voter registration to say, I'm a resident of so-and-so. They're like, okay, infant, you can go throw a ballot in a box that doesn't make any difference, and we'll continue to administer to your ass from birth to death. Yeah. So there you go. That's the problem with residency, and that's the presumption that you're a resident of D.C. is in this state. It's fucked up.
Man, this is so cold. I mean, it's kind of overwhelming to realize, you know, how much we don't know or how many things we've just been willfully misled on, and this has just gone on for generation after generation after generation.
Yeah, it's the slow burning of a slow boiling of the frog. They couldn't have done all this to us instantaneously. We would have fucking killed them.
Yeah.
And if they turn up the heat too much, we're probably going to kill them anyway.
Probably so.
That's what happens with revolution. Sorry, you know, your history. But
just trends. Yeah. Yeah. Just historical trends, man.
Nobody's can't push too far. You can't push that ox too far. Eventually, the ox turns around and gores your ass.
Right. It's not violence, right? But if you go punch a cow enough times, you're going to get
fucking destroyed.
Yeah, you get the horns. They get self-defense, right? I mean, the animal has the same right of self-defense as you do. So,
yeah,
that's coming. And I, the more erratic that they get, the more fucking nuts that they get, the harder that they push, the faster people wake up. And I think it was, Goebbels that said, a law that, how did he put it? I almost have to look up the meme. He said something like, a law.
Laws that are, laws against
hate speech. That are not, yeah, that are basically, yeah, that, yeah, against the laws hate speech against the Jew is usually the beginning of the end of the Jew.
Yes.
And of course, we're paraphrasing this, but that's basically what he said. And when I saw that quote, I'm like, well, that's coming.
Yeah, I know, man. It seems to definitely be on the horizon. And I just, man, I think like a lot of people, we're just ready for anything to go down, you know, because there's going to be some catalyst that causes change. There always is. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a terrible thing, just that it probably will.
Well, in the history of revolution, it is always the state that does something first. It's never us. It's never the people. People wish to live in peace. People wish to have amazing, productive, fascinating lives. They don't want to go to fucking war.
Yeah.
It's always the state that brings war. Okay. Well, then you're going to get what you got, motherfucker. This is how this works. And since the fact that there are more white armed men in America than all of the rest of the world's militaries, police, and fuck you agents combined, and the fact that the vast majority of them are snipers because you have rifles that you hunt with and they can take out anything at about 300 yards. With some fairly large size ammunition, you cannot win a war against millions of snipers. It is impossible.
Nope. And they got jerky for days, man. They're going to be fine.
Exactly. They'll
wait you. Yeah, they can
wait you out.
You ain't going to make it, man. They got 3 thermos full of coffee, bro. You're not going to get out.
That's exactly right. I think it was Russia that did a military survey of what it would take to invade the United States. And I think this was done in like either early 90s or late 80s, I think. And anyway, what Russia came to the conclusion of is that it would take the entire Russian military to invade and take over Texas, but they would be able to hold it for, I think they said, 3 months. And then the entire Russian military would be wiped out, eradicated.
Absolutely. So they don't have, yeah. I mean, The difference in power, at least as far as just ammunition goes, is staggering. Like, Americans have rat-holed away a lot of gunpowder, a lot of bullets.
Oh my God!
I mean, far more than any armies have ever produced or used. So
yeah, I think there's 3 guns. Three. I think there's maybe 2. I think it's 3. I think there's 3. I think there's 3 guns to every single man and woman and child that's in America.
I've heard something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's 400 million population, right? So.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's not just small arms. That's everything from 50 cal to bazookas to fucking mortars to some motherfuckers are out there running around in tanks and, you know, armored SUVs.
Yeah, and it's not Iwo Jima either, man. It's 5,000 miles from one end of this country to the other, you know? So,
exactly. Right.
It's ridiculous. That's a lot.
Yeah, you're not – you're just simply not winning a war. If you decide to – if you did trigger it, which they always do because they're fucking retarded, it's not going to end well for anybody.
You know, I'm going to just – I'm voting on the left, dude. I think I'm just going to keep throwing out some strategic propaganda. And then, I don't need to trigger anyone into doing anything. I think ultimately these moron retards that they created, these leftists who are completely imbalanced and completely, you know, endocrine disrupted forever. I think they're going to be the ones that do all the bad. And we're just going to sit there and be like, hey, fuck you guys. You guys said that we were the bad guys. So, you know, enjoy the camps. Yeah.
Yeah, it is exactly what's going to turn around, because when a this is a, America is just a different, it's just a different beehive, if you will. You know, when you think about the history of those that tried to suppress or take over or try to destroy a free people.
Yeah.
The only thing that comes to my mind in history that this would be somewhat akin to would be the Persians trying to take over the Greeks and King Leonidas saying, fuck you, I'm going to just bring 300 of my guys and see how many you die. Right, which didn't go very well for the Persians, and they were like, holy shit, free men seem to fight a little bit harder.
Great movie.
Yeah, but that was the thing. I mean, that when you have free men fighting for their freedom and their sovereignty to protect their nation, their people, their children, you're dead. That's it.
That's right. You're definitely – it's not going to be as easy as you think.
No.
Because these people are fighting for their home and their homeland. You're far away from home, and you know, you got 5,000 more miles to march there, bug man. So good luck. That's what I think.
And they did a survey. Yeah, and they did a survey also regarding American military personnel. I don't remember when this was done, but it was a while ago. And they surveyed basically everybody in the United States military, and they said, okay, if you know shit totally hit the fan, or there was some kind of civil war, or whatever, would you stay in the military and bow and patrol or whatever, do things on American soil? And like 90% of them said, no, I'd go home to protect my family.
Right on. That's the way
it's the way it should be. But meaning that when you call on the people that you think are going to protect you, they're not going to be there.
We've already seen this.
So,
well, we saw it I saw it in the riots, and that's when I mean, we suspected all our lives that we weren't really going to get much help from the helpers, right? The highly paid help. But I think in 2020, 2019, we really saw that they're not on our side, but nobody is, right? Like there's nobody on our side.
Just local militia. Yeah. That's why you have to form your local militia, get your groups together, understand, learn, talk to your neighbors, teach them about the VSOF, you know, calmly. You know, probably don't want to throw too many things at them too fast, because they'd probably be like, what the fuck? But you still want to be able to know your neighbors and at least have at least 5 to hopefully 10 fellow white men with arms that know how to use them and know what to do if it's a fan. Like instantly, like you guys have a plan. You have a militia plan. Okay, if this happens, we all go here. We meet up here. If this happens, we get on a meeting and we decide what to do. If this happens, we bug the fuck out. Whatever it is, you have to be prepared. So, you know, better do it now. Yeah.
Says, fair dues to you and Godspeed on the next 30 years to you, VSOF. Thank you, Red Baron. Very kind. Dude, my audience loves you. I knew that they would. I knew that they would just from talking to you in chat. But, I'd like to at least get you back the next couple scheduling rounds. So, you know, sure. Once a month anyway. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, make you a regular, and then you can. Man, I don't mind getting schooled on any night of the week. In fact, I'm honored and proud to be able to enjoy and benefit from some of the experience that somebody else spent a lifetime fighting for. You know what I mean? Like. Hey.
Right. I don't want anybody to have to do this. I don't want anybody to have to spend 30 years trying to figure this fucking shit out. That's the last thing I want anybody to have to do.
Yeah.
So I tried to make it as clear, concise, easy, organized as possible. And if you want to go deeper, trust me, I can take you down the bottom of every single rabbit hole until your head hits the ground and you break your neck. Okay. But I don't tend to do that because it scares the fuck out of a lot of people. Obviously, for good reason. It's skate. What's at the bottom of those? All of these rabbit holes, you know, not just the ones I, you know, take you guys down, but the ones that you've taken me down, the ones that your other guests have taken me down. They're all horrifying.
Hell yeah, that's why it's the Doom Depot, nigger. You fucking. That's what's after Nazis, man. Is Doom. Exactly. You know, that's it. That's the natural progression. You know, if we can't have Hitler, then. By God, we'll have all your souls.
Yeah, that's exactly where it's headed.
JK, they don't have souls. They're not here.
No, they don't. Their souls are already pledged to Lucifer, so be it.
I hereby declare and claim their souls and revoke my trust on y'all's ass. Give me my souls now. There ought to be.
I'll send you right back to your master, to put it that way.
Oh, man, that's you know, I keep having these magnificent questions pop up, but if I ask any of them, we're gonna wreck the schedule. I want to say thank you. Please tell everybody where they can find you. Of course, if you guys haven't noticed, I didn't put them in the links in the description, but I'll add those before the replays.
But I did. I put them in the comment section.
So you're so good.
The main platforms that I put in are Odyssey, YouTube. Now, if you guys watch the YouTube, they're going to be neutered. Okay. When I have a class, I have a rolling meme scroll up in the upper right corner, which you cannot watch. I have to get rid of it when I play it on YouTube. But otherwise, you watch it on Odyssey, watch it on Rumble. There you can get a good laugh at all the memes that I throw up there. And they're not particularly like following the class. It's just something to look at. If I'm rambling on too long, you can look at a meme. And then I'm on Gab. We have a Gab group, VSLF on Gab group. And then my website is vocationalscienceoffreedom.wordpress.com. And that's where you can find the welcome package and come on and join us.
This guy, he went the full distance because that's what he does, right? That's what we do is we go all the way. And I'm a big appreciator of big dogs that want to go the whole 3 hours and stay interesting the whole time, right? No song breaks, no anything. No, not even any pre-made questions, right? So thank you for being on our show. I hope that people will at least come say hello and pay a little bit of attention, because all that stuff that we just ran through, all that stuff is very well expanded on, and you can learn all you want to know about it over there. Go check that out. That's just one of many places, man. Use these tools to our advantage. And thank you, Vocational Science of Freedom, for giving – I think this has been – one of the most interesting big brain interviews I've had in quite some time.
Well, thank you, Flood. It's been a pleasure to be with all you guys. And you know me, I'll sometimes be lurking in your chat too. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got to catch up with you on some things. But definitely we're going to be doing this some more. And hopefully next time I'll be able to get a little more thematic with some of the questions too, because I think people like that when it's a little less erratic and a little bit more focused on particular subjects. And we're going to do awesome work together. I can tell already.
Yep. And anybody's welcome to email me as well at vsof@protonmail.com.
vsof@protonmail.com. That's the Vertical Science of Freedom. And let's see here, 757. Thanks again, brother. And now you get cut off. It's a real honor to cut you off, sir.
All right, guys. Everybody have a great night. And I'll talk to all of you soon.
Much love, brother. All right, man, that's another white brother, right? And he's fighting the system. He's fighting the powers that be in his own way. And he has developed his own kung fu for over 30 years, right? And he's developed a system. He's even developed his own artwork, his own everything, like his own iconography, his own – this is just too cool. And on top of exposing the completely strange and almost alien type of world that we really live in, just beneath the surface of a bunch of Jews handing each other receipts, that really there's a way for you to get out of it. There's a way for you to stop, quit doing whatever you're doing with your trust, nigger, right? Y'all need to stop abandoning y'all trust, nigger. I'm just playing. That was my Dave Chappelle impression. I want to say thank you to all the folks who hung out with us tonight for the Big Brain Show. I know that sometimes these things can be a challenge, but I was really glad to be able to get Vocational Science of Freedom tonight. Normally, I'd go check out what's going on. Night Nation's coming on. I'm out of here, man. Catch me over there, bro. You know what's up? You know what I'm saying? I'll see you at NNR. Thanks to all the people that I suckered for money and grifted hard. Thank you very much. Let me just see. I think it was those couple people. Thank you very much. That's Spy Hunter. And I can damn near just so close. Was it Modern Run? I don't want to piss anybody off. 14 words. Where'd they go? Oh, well, never mind. Where'd they go? That's weird. Oh, well, hey, if you donate to the show, thank you very much. And if you spread the links around, thank you very much. And if you stay pro-white,
thank you very much. And if you'll come back tomorrow, I sure appreciate that too. It's Fuhrer Friday on the Flood Show, and that means pretty much nothing at this point. I think everybody knows. Maybe we'll have something. Maybe we'll have you some Hitler tomorrow. Maybe we'll have you some Hitler. If you're really good boys, we'll have you some Hitler tomorrow. All right, Goyim. Remember the 6 million. Okay. White power.
White power.
I gotta hit my. Where's my big brain song? You get an echo on that?
Flood's fucking big brain show. Flood's fucking big brain show. Yeah.
So based.